Thanks, Steve. Hi, everybody. It's Thursday. I'm Bill. That's Wendy. You know who you are. We're at 312-981-7200. Can I just share with you a little behind the scenes of what goes on here?
Maybe.
You
Does
know,
it involve me?
No, you weren't here yet.
Okay, good.
This is prior to your arrival. Steve Cochran is away this week.
He is?
He's not here this week.
I didn't notice.
They had our friend Dave Ennett and our friend Andrea Darlis, who only used one Farley Granger reference. I was very disappointed in her.
I had to ask you who that was.
That was my favorite moment of what I heard. I mean, it was
talking
all good.
Talking to Norm MacDonald, yeah.
Talking to Norm MacDonald, and she pulled out a Farley Granger reference. He's one of the two actors, along with Robert Walker, who starred in the Hitchcock classic Strangers on a Train. Loved the reference. That was fantastic.
She was broadcasting just for you
I
at
think
that
she
moment.
Might have been. I don't know who else out there went, yay, a Farley Granger reference, but me. I did. All right. They had on Tommy Lasorda.
Yes.
Did you get
did
to
you
hear
get
Tommy
to meet
Lasorda?
Him?
I did. I did, and I was so, I'm so, you know this.
I know.
I'm such a baseball geek. I love baseball so much.
On the way in, I was thinking, I hope he's here when you come in.
I love baseball, and there's Tommy Lasorda, and when I was growing up, the Dodgers had a total of two managers over a span of 35 or 40 years. Two managers, a man named Walter Alston, and then when he retired, Tommy Lasorda became their manager. And that's it for Dodgers for 35 or 40
Jeez.
Years. Two managers. Other teams, 40 managers.
Yeah.
All right. So
White Sox needs a new manager, by the way, if I could just throw that in.
You
really?
May get
He's
your
coming
wish.
Back?
You may get your wish. Is it definite?
USA Today's saying Robin Ventura's back. I hope it's
How about that?
Not right.
So after Tommy is on with Dave and Andrea, he's outside, and I thought this may
this
be
is
my
your
only
moment.
Chance to meet Tommy Lasorda. So I approached him, and I'm always very careful about that. I don't want to scare anybody.
You
I'm
don't want
imposing.
Him to yell at you either.
Right. I don't want him to taint my memory because
right.
in my head, I love Tommy Lasorda.
Yes.
So I just said, Mr. Lasorda, and he had a handler. There was somebody to make sure that, you know, he got to where he needed to go. So I just said, Mr. Lasorda, and the guy held up a finger like, let Tommy compose himself, and when he's ready, he will address you.
You may approach him,
right?
and he will address you.
Right?
Back.
And that happened. And he goes, hello, young man. And I go, I just want to introduce myself. My name is Bill. I have the show on after this one. I'm a huge baseball fan, and I so enjoyed your work over the years. You look great. How old is he, 88 years
yeah.
old? So he nodded and thanked me. And I said, hey, we have a mutual friend in common. And he goes, who would that be? And I go, Tom Dreesen. You know, I've known Tom for a long time, and he's a guest on our show quite often. And then he went into a tirade of swear words, the likes of which you would not be ready for.
Are you kidding?
He's been a friend of Tom Dreesen's for decades, because Tom talks about him all the time. All
well,
the time.
Should you be saying this on the air? Because
no,
Tom
maybe
thinks
not.
They're friends.
Maybe I shouldn't.
Tom yeah. one thinks Tom.
I know. So I said, I didn't know if he was kidding or not, because anytime Tommy Lasorda is mentioned by Tom Dreesen, it's always very favorable. That... Bleep, 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 and bleep.
Did he swear more than me?
No.
Damn
he did
it.
Not swear as much as you, but it was a more, it was like...
A scarier swear?
You know in The Exorcist when Reagan is throwing up and it's just a barrage?
Of green pea soup.
It was a barrage of green pea swears from Tommy Lasorda. So I said, Mr. Lasorda, forgive me, but I don't know if you're kidding or not. Are you friends or not friends? He goes, we were friends. And he tells me a story... about how he invited Tom Dreesen into the dugout one time, and he gave him a special Dodgers jersey that had the name Dreesen on it. And he goes, and then the next time I see him on television, he's wearing a Cubs jersey, and he makes no mention at all. I'm cleaning this up, because between every word that he said, he was swearing. He makes no mention at all of the special jersey that I had made for him. All he talks about is his bleep, 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 and bleep Cubs jersey. Some friend! It was so nice to meet you.
Boy, you are going to be forbidden to talk to any guest on their way out because you got them all upset.
I did get them upset. And even
poor Tom Dreesen is listening, probably crying right now.
His handler looked at me like, you only had a minute with him, and this is how
you
chose to spend your minute. But I thought,
you
I swear.
I got to tell you, with all the showbiz feuds going on, honestly, you never know. What is real and what is showbiz?
I know.
You are a name dropper. And not to benefit you, really. You do it to, like, work your way into their
I was looking for a
bridge
zone. That
yeah.
would somehow...
Don't do that anymore.
But does it... Like, in your head, you go, well, that makes sense. I've heard Tom Dreesen talk about Tommy Lasorda. I'm not exaggerating. 30 times, 40 times over the years. He's been on Letterman talking about baseball and how I was out there with Tommy Lasorda and Dennis Farina, and we did this and we did that. And you go, well, they've got to be friends. He's always saying such nice things about him. But on Tommy Lasorda's side of the coin, it was not as pleasant. And just because of that, I don't know if there was something else that ignited this, but seriously, Tom Dreesen's a huge Cubs fan, so if he's going to be on TV, he's going to wear a Cubs jersey despite of any
Harvey
Dodger.
Harvey Illinois pride. You're going to wear
Cubs.
Pride
of Harvey, right, right.
I just wouldn't bring up names in the future, because now your first meeting was tarnished.
I need there to be at some point, I need to make this right with
him.
Oh,
God, leave it alone.
You
think so?
It's
going to be worse. They're going to come to fisticuffs, the Battle of the Toms.
I don't want that. I don't want that, but I don't want, like, he left visibly. I mean, he's an 88-year-old guy, and he left all grumbly and shaken, and even his hand just looked at me. He looked so disappointed. You know that look your mom would give you if you didn't?
And that hurts.
I got that from his handler, like, oh, don't bring up Tom Dreesen to Tommy Lasorda. I didn't know that. Why would I have done that if I knew that? I would never have done
that. Well, of course, but I'm just saying, you never know what's brewing in someone else's pot, and maybe you shouldn't name drop.
I do now.
Well, it's boiling.
Is there a safe name? Is there like one name that whenever I meet a celebrity, I go, hey, we have a mutual friend, Mother Teresa.
Pia Zadora.
Pia Zadora.
I am with you on the Pia
Granger.
Zadora. Because who could have any bad thing to say about Pia Zadora? Is she still with us?
Yeah, she's still alive. I think the two would be Mother Teresa or Will Rogers. Like from now on, I'll go, hey, you know who says nice things about you is Will Rogers was in doing rope tricks. He said some nice things
about
you.
Why didn't you just talk baseball with him?
See, that's in my head. It was like a two-pronged attack. Mention a mutual friend and then go, oh, by the way, how about America's favorite pastime, Tommy Lasorda? Is it better than ever or what? I thought. But
I
then
never...
he was so angry that...
I'm sorry, I missed it. I was going to come down there. He was so nice to my son.
Was he?
About 10 years ago. I was
interviewing
him.
Noah didn't mention Tom Dreesen.
Well, until Noah mentioned Tom Dreesen. No, but, you know, he brought him in, you know... Basically put him on his lap and told him stories. And I just wanted to thank him. And I'm like, well, he's probably yelling at Bill right now.
Yeah, at that point, he was yelling at me. It wasn't, in all fairness, he wasn't yelling at me. It's like I picked the worst name I could have. It was like, hey, you know who we're friends with? You're friends with the devil.
No, you didn't do Dave Kingman. You could have done Dave
right.
Kingman.
Who's that?
Right.
What do I think of his performance?
former baseball player who Tommy Lasorda was not a fan of.
One day, Kingman hit 3 home runs at Dodger Stadium in a reporter after the game said, well, what do you think of Kingman's performance? What do I think of his performance? What? And then he just went off, all Dreesen on him.
Yeah.
Well, I never bring up other people's names because you don't know what's really going on.
I thought that
your
one was
defense,
safe. I thought
you
it was
do
safe.
That a lot, and not in a bad way, but you
right.
do know a lot of people. And
yeah.
I'm here when it happens, like, oh, you know who we have in common? And I'd say 9.5 out of 10 times, it's awesome.
Yeah.
This was not that time.
No. No.
I never bring up anybody's name.
God, I'm so upset. And that was not my goal, to get Tommy sort of upset. I had no idea in the world. And I don't think this happened recently. I think this happened, like, from the sound of it, because he hasn't been manager of the Dodgers for 15 years, but he goes, one day I brought him into the dugout and I give him this jersey, and I'm like, boy, this had to be like 15 years ago. Let it go. He's a Cubs fan.
I think we should get Tom Dreesen. We should try and track him down and find out what happened.
Oh, that'll
he'll
make
get
it better.
Mad at me.
He's already mad at you.
Hey, Tom, we have a mutual friend.
I heard 2 swear words that I'd never heard before. Like, I thought I knew every swear
word. Could
you
share them with me? Because I'd like to add them to my repertoire.
It's called Dodger Blue.
He used the Z word. I didn't even know there was a Z word.
Zagnut?
Yeah. Wendy, we're on air.
I can't believe you did that.
As it's happening, I'm going, how surrealistic is this? Who else could I, except Dave Kingman, obviously. I picked the one name
his
that set him off. No. I know. All right. We'll take a quick.
Does Dave Emmett know this happened?
No, I don't want to tell Dave. Because when Tommy Lasorda left the studio, everybody was happy. Everybody was
Until
happy.
Until Bill showed up.
And then 10 seconds later, it all unraveled.
How can you sleep tonight?
I don't think I will be able to sleep.
How can you live with yourself?
I you know what I'm going to have to do is hand in my Tommy Lasorda baseball cards.
You're going to have to go stalk him, find him, and apologize
Make it right.
to him. Yes. I'll go ahead. I'll finish the show. Wouldn't that be funny, too, if all of a sudden he turns, what the hell are you doing
you
here?
You again. Who else's name are you going to bring up? Nobody.
And then Kingman. That's when you whip Kingman. That up.
It becomes a Curb Your Enthusiasm episode.
Already
that's what
has.
It was like. Yeah. That's exactly what it was like. All right, we'll take a quick break.
Great work, more, Bill. Oh, the ambassador
you.
Of friendliness.
The ambassador of friendliness. That's me. It's Bill and One at WGN. Is there some penance I can do? I'm not a religious person, but there should be some penance I could do to make this right. I insulted Tommy Lasorda and our friend Tom Dreesen all in one move.
Well, and then you publicized it.
Yeah, that was probably the worst part of it.
When will you learn?
In retrospect, this should not be discussed out loud.
You know how we have conversations off the air during
yes.
commercial breaks? That's
yes.
when you should have told me.
Yeah, that would have been better. All right.
Because this is going to get back to Dreesen. And Dreesen is always so happy.
Can I tell you, I think I'm going to call him and tell him what
oh
happened
my
myself.
God.
You don't think that's a good move? I have his number. I think I should be the one. Because Tom's a well-connected guy, and I'm sure somebody will pass along the story to him, and I think it should be me, don't you? You don't think it should be?
Yeah, but see, now you're doing it again. I have his number.
Well, that's how I can reach him.
I know.
I could leave a post-it note at Dominic's, but I don't think he'll see it. Dominic's
hey, Pam.
Closed. I just realized.
Bill's been a bad boy.
I've been a bad boy.
Boy.
Well, am I on?
Yes, Pam.
It's Jan, but...
Oh, Jan. Hi, Jan.
Sorry, Jan.
I just wanted to submit that. Bill, stop beating yourself up. It was unintentional. Tommy Lasorda owns his response. It's not your fault.
But
it's
I upset him
fault.
So much,
every
and
time,
I didn't want to upset
time,
him.
Every time we say something, we're basically kind, and you were just being kind, and you were idolizing him, and you were trying to, as you said, bridge, how do I talk to this, my idol, this man that
yes.
I respect? And his response is his response. Go have a drink and relax.
All right.
It's his fault, not yours.
All right. Well, thank you, Jan. That's so nice of you.
Sometimes 88-year-olds are more like themselves than they want to be.
All right. That's possible.
See, and now you have something to look forward to.
Yeah.
You're
going
to become ornery when you're 88.
Or
exactly.
sooner.
Or sooner.
Exactly.
Jan, thank you for calling.
Thanks,
we appreciate
Jan.
It. It
just,
is going to bother you, though.
I didn't want to upset Tommy Lasorda. I did not want to upset. He's one of the goodwill ambassadors of baseball, Wendy.
But now somewhere along the line, you've upset Tom Dreesen. There's some dirty laundry that's on the air.
I know. All people named Tom are now upset because of me.
Hi, Dave.
Thomas Jefferson's
hey,
not going to do the John
I
Williams show.
I was talking about Tommy Lasorda, and he was on a TV commercial years ago for an Italian restaurant, and the waitress was putting cheese on a guy's plate. It was like 8 inches high. She ran out of cheese. So Lasorda walks in with his outfit on. Hits his right arm like a reliever coming in. All of a sudden, this next waiter comes in, and he's got a punk of cheese that's like the size of a football. And the guy puts another like 10 inches on the guy's plate. It's one of the funniest commercials I've ever seen. I mean, it's, you know, the guy's a legend in baseball.
I know.
It's one of the funniest commercials. Have you seen it?
That's
so.
How I got to win him over, Wendy. I got to get him a big thing of cheese. That's like sending him a dozen flowers in baseball. You send him a huge brick of cheese. I'm going to do that.
That is going to make it worse. And Dave, I want to just tell you how cute it is that you and Bill both say outfits. They're uniforms.
Baseball outfits.
Thank you, Dave.
All righty, bye.
Thanks, Dave.
He said outfit.
I know he did. That's catching on. You're going to be the last person who doesn't say outfit.
I say outfit. I'm a girl.
Outfit says it all.
All right, Catherine, what's going on?
Hey, you guys. You cracked me up.
Oh, thank
Bill.
You.
Listen.
Yes.
He was on with Cochran the other day.
Yeah.
Tom Dreesen was?
Dreesen was.
We had him on last week, but...
In happier times.
Yeah.
Well, and he was talking about Lasorda and how Lasorda gets picked at him all the time and gives him a hard time. So I wouldn't even think twice about it.
I hope you're right. Because anytime one has talked about the other, it's always been in glowing terms. And then today I thought, oh, there'll be more of that. We'll all share a happy story about Tom Dreesen and Frank Sinatra and Dennis Farina. It'll be great, but it wasn't great.
Yeah. Listen back to the tape. I'm sorry. Maybe he was with you. I was thinking Cochran. I listened to you guys, all of you, all day. So, but he was talking about how Lasorda gets super ticked at him about yeah. being a Cubs fan. and all these other things. I think Tom Dreesen finds humor in it, and obviously Tommy Lasorda has part of his personality is his anger or his ability to get super intense.
Right.
And it's the rivalry. That's what the fight's about, so that's not really a fight.
True. True.
Right.
You should see Bill's little puppy dog eyes right now. He's so sad.
Well, you know why? Aww. Tommy Lasorda uses this phrase all the time. I didn't hear him say it today, but he always talks about bleeding Dodger blue. That's like a phrase he always says. I bleed Dodger blue. And I thought at some point, blue blood was just going to spring from his veins. It would be like the end of Carrie, and there would just be blue blood everywhere. I didn't want that.
Witnesses say Bill F. was covered with splayed blue blood.
Well, ask him to prom. That'll make it all better.
All right, I might have to.
All right. Well, Catherine, thank you. We'll check out the podcast of Steve Cochran's show because Dreesen did not mention Tommy Lasorda with us.
No. No.
There you go. All right.
Thank you.
Don't worry about it, bud.
All right. You're very nice.
Oh, you got a bud. Hey,
I like
bud.
That. I
don't
need that.
Don't worry, little buddy.
I need that today.
All right.
All right.
Thank you, Steve. Bill, I want to say hello to the Stagg High School seniors that were just traipsed through the studio. They're from Palos Hills, isn't it?
Yes. Seemed like nice kids.
They did, and we became very parental.
All of a sudden, yeah, we seemed responsible.
I didn't swear.
No, not even one time.
I know.
Was almost disappointed.
Pretty good. All right. Do you remember this alleged, and I'm using the quotation marks, clock boy?
Mm-hmm.
This was a kid who was arrested last year after bringing a homemade clock to school.
Mm-hmm.
And they thought, that's not good. There are wires. They thought it was a bomb, and he was in big trouble for it. Well, now he is in the news because the clock boy's father is filing a lawsuit against Glenn Beck, Ben Shapiro, and we'll find out who else. We have attorney Loretta D. Powers on the line with us. Hi, Loretta.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me on.
Absolutely. Now, what is your connection with this?
Well, I'm a Dallas-based attorney, and I've been following this case since the inception.
All right, and why don't you retell the story? Did I get the gist of it?
Yeah, I think you covered it perfectly.
We're leaving out, though, Loretta, unless I'm reading it wrong, we're leaving out the added bonus that he's a Muslim teen, and that probably added to him being what the school deems a little bit of a suspect in this, huh?
Right, and he already has sued the school on a previous lawsuit, and now he's suing Glenn Beck. And let's be honest here, the last thing we all want to see is Glenn Beck in a courtroom.
Yeah.
So, he would probably like it, of course, but we don't need to see that. Now, with the suit that was filed with the school, was that settled yet?
No, it has not been settled yet. And I find that the timing of this lawsuit is really suspicious. For example, these comments were made about a year ago,
mm-hmm.
and about 5 days before this lawsuit was brought to court.
You're driving right now. Well, this is 14-year-old Ahmed Mohammed, his family suffered branding and as political operatives or even terrorists by media outlets like Fox and conservative commentators, like we mentioned, Glenn Beck. And they filed this lawsuit, was it yesterday or last week?
It was on the 21st is whenever they filed it. But it was 5 days after Glenn Beck had settled a kind of similar lawsuit. So I don't know if the dad is just using his kid as an ATM machine right now or if this has legal standing. I mean, with a defamation lawsuit, there basically needs to be two things that need to happen for a plaintiff to be successful, and that is false statements and injuries that occurred because of those false statements. Well, we all know that political commentators, they just share their opinions. They're not factual statements.
I'm surprised they don't get sued more for what they say, political pundits.
Because they don't have a legal leg to stand on. No jury is going to award a plaintiff in this case.
Loretta, remind us, because I don't remember, why he had a homemade clock device to begin with. Was this an assignment? Why would he bring this to school to begin with?
No, he was a bright kid, or still is a bright kid. He just assembled things in the garage, and he wanted to show his teacher what he made at home. And it's very impressive. You know, I can't even assemble an IKEA table.
Bill's in that
I know
group
what you mean.
With you.
Believe me, I know what you mean. So he brings this homemade clock to school to show the teacher, and when do things go a little awry? Who sees this and thinks there could be some problem with what he created?
Well, the teacher thinks that it's looks like a bomb, but she knows the student. So she's like, you know, keep that in your backpack. That's a very nice clock, Ahmed. And apparently another teacher saw it, and that's whenever she informed the authorities. And the Irving police detained him for an hour before calling his parents. And in Texas, that's perfectly legal to do. You don't have to contact the parents until he's taken into custody.
And he was a 14-year-old kid who was being questioned. God, that goes back to Making a Murderer with Brendan Dassey, who there was no parent present. That's legal in Texas?
Yes, and I think it's wrong. I think if you're being questioned by police, you should absolutely have your parents there or an adult or a guardian. It's just common sense.
All right, and he was arrested and suspended from school for 3 days, which I just find crazy. I mean, at some point, it's wrong of the school to assume that it's a bomb, especially when the first teacher saw it and knows the kid and said, hey, don't show this to anybody, but
sure.
That's really awesome.
Right.
It's wrong of the school to do that, but don't they come back and say, oh, my God, it's not a bomb. We apologize for assuming that, and you are not suspended.
Well, they always thought it was a hoax bomb, a fake bomb, and that is a crime in itself, to make a device that looks like a bomb in order to scare people. But this kid had no intent to scare anybody. He just wanted to show a teacher a clock he made.
And no history of any problems. No, there's nothing in his background that would make you take a second look at him, right?
There were some school suspensions and some situations with kids, just typical roughhousing
yeah.
with other kids.
Yeah. Was there ever a time, Loretta, that the school thought it was serious enough to call in a bomb squad, any kind of a unit like that? That didn't take place, did it?
No.
No? Okay,
no,
good.
That did not happen.
Good.
Well, then why was the kid suspended? I'm seriously questioning this whole thing. And now what is the father has sued the school, which I think is a good move because he was suspended for 3 days. Doesn't that go on your record? I mean, it's just a bad situation. But what is he now looking for Glenn Beck, from Glenn Beck and Fox News?
He wants a retraction of some of the statements that they made. He thinks that the statements triggered more hatred towards this family.
Did they have to relocate after this became public?
Well, Ahmed, he actually got a scholarship to study in Qatar. So they moved there for a year, but they recently moved back.
I mentioned this earlier, Loretta, the fact that Ahmed Mohammed, is a Muslim, does play into it to some extent, doesn't it?
I think so. Unfortunately, we are at a time of war, and racial profiling does happen, and it's unfortunate, and it's a travesty that it happens in this day and age.
Yeah.
Here's the exact thing, according to the Dallas Morning News, and I'm quoting, the Mohammed family are peaceful Muslims who have been falsely accused of being terrorists and engaging in jihad, that according to the lawsuit. All right,
that's
so
what they think.
What happens next then?
What happens next is maybe somebody on this lawsuit will want to settle, because whenever you're sued like this, you have to make two decisions. One, do I take 2 years out of my life plus resources to fight this and win? Or do I settle it quickly, get it out of the way, and get it over with?
Loretta, do you know specifically what either Glenn Beck or Fox, or he's also named in the suit as The Blaze, that's Glenn Beck's outlet, do you know specifically what was said that they found so damaging, or is it just in general?
They said that the father had planned this all along.
That the father was behind this?
Muslim rhetoric.
Huh. All right.
And this kid got to go to the White House. Do you remember President Barack Obama invited him to the White House?
Prior.
Yes, I do.
Prior or post?
I think post. Wasn't it after this got in the news?
Yes, because President Obama actually tweeted, cool clock on Ed. You should bring it to the White House.
Yeah.
Wow. All right.
All right. Well, so perhaps this is a frivolous lawsuit, and you don't think it really stands a chance at all, do you?
I really don't. I don't think it meets the elements to be successful.
All right. I do think for the school, though, that I'm anxious to see what turns out from mm-hmm. that. And what is Ahmed Mohammed up to now?
I think he's living in DFW, going to school.
Good for him. I hope he continues to make clocks. Maybe he can develop a new Apple Watch.
Right.
Right.
That's Dallas Fort Worth, by the way, right? Or did you say DSW? Is that the shoe outlet, or where is he?
Oh, I'd like to work there.
That'll be all right, too.
There.
Loretta, thank you. We appreciate it. This is a crazy story. We really appreciate your expertise. Thanks so much.
Thank you all for having me on.
That's Loretta Powers, an attorney commenting on the case of Ahmed Mohammed, 14 years old, accused by his school of bringing in an incendiary device. Turned out it was a homemade clock.
But if they didn't call the bomb squad, I don't even understand why they went through with the suspension and his arrest.
Yeah, that's a little sketchy, isn't it? I'm not sure if they consider this to be a serious threat, that would have been their first move, but that never happened. It was just the questioning. All right, we'll take a quick break. We have more ahead. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
I was just thinking about something, Bill, and I will post a picture of it if I can find it somewhere on
Facebook.
I made a clock.
Oh, you did make a clock, did you?
I made a clock for my kitchen because I had looked around for a clock that I had envisioned, and I couldn't find one I liked.
Uh-huh.
So
you've made your own.
I made my own clock.
How? I wouldn't know where to start. I would buy a clock and write my name on it and tell people I made it.
I got to find a picture of it. I wanted a particular weathered looking clock, and I went to Michael's Craft Place and I found the clock workings. And then I bought some, I don't know what it's called. It's like thick cardboard. It's about an inch thick. There's like foam in the middle of it.
Oh, I've seen that.
Foam board, I think it's called.
Foam board.
Yeah,
and
foam board.
I took my X-Acto knife and I measured out how big I wanted it and I just cut it. And then I painted it with black paint and then I kind of weathered it a little bit and sanded it. And then I painted on the Roman numerals. Punched a little hole in the middle, put the clock workings on the back, and it's been hanging in our kitchen, and I love it.
Does it look like a professional quality clock? When people see it, do they think, well, Wendy couldn't have made this clock. This is obviously purchased. It's from an artisan.
It looks like you could buy it on Etsy.
Oh, it does?
I mean, if you took it down and touched it, which you have to do twice a year because you have to change the time.
Right.
You can tell it's made out of fiberboard, but I'll find a picture and I'll ask your advice. I'm a crafty little beaver.
I guess you are.
I really am.
You didn't seem like somebody who'd make clocks until you just told us.
But I just thought about it and
That's why you're on a no-fly list. That's one of the reasons.
I would actually bring it to work to show you.
All right, bring it in.
But then there I will be arrested. And I will be known as clock woman, not girl. I'm too old.
You know, it's going to happen eventually. You might as well get it out of the way.
Wow, I'm surprised I didn't identify with this kid more. I just thought about it.
Yeah.
Couldn't find the one I wanted, so I'll make a clock instead.
Call the guest back. Call our last guest back and see if you're dangerous.
Steve Bertrand, I know that there was a shooting on the outbound Eisenhower. Was it late last night or early this morning?
Oh, it was early this morning, around, I think in the 6 o'clock hour.
And they had the outbound Eisenhower closed. I heard Mary reporting on that all morning. And I was coming in on the Eisenhower. And I got to tell you, it was really creepy not seeing one car on the outbound side and flashing lights everywhere. And then as I got near Rush Press St. Luke, which isn't called that anymore, but when I had surgery there years ago on my knee, it was Rush Press St. Luke, or Rush Medical Center.
Badly they changed the name.
Yes, it went awesomely. But as I got to about that part, on the outbound side, you saw a lot of times when they have a presidential motorcade, you see the city trucks like that typically have a plow in front of them winter.
Yeah.
I don't think there was a plow. Maybe there was, but there were like three of those, and they were all like orchestrated in various positions. It looked like, you know, the jets flying ahead. They had a position to be in.
Was it like a pace car situation?
Yes.
Right. It was,
It was like in an arrow. The front one was out in front.
Like the Blue Angels, but with
city
trucks.
That's exactly what it was like. And then there were a bunch of police cars with the Mars lights going. And then they were moving very slowly, and then it was completely bizarre to me because as you notice that as you're coming in, all of a sudden, all this bumper-to-bumper traffic is behind them. It was like they were leading a parade to reopen the Eisenhower.
Right.
It was really wild to see that.
I'm building a clock right now, but I can imagine... I can imagine the strangeness of all that.
I feel bad for the people who were front of line who've been waiting all that time, and then the trucks are keeping them from just...
moving.
Blowing out of there.
I know, because typically when something's reopened, you hit the gas and go flying.
The best part of the, you know, it's a good day when you are right at the express lanes when they open.
Right.
You ever
the
see
best.
That? You see
the best when the gates open?
The gates open and it's just you and pavement, baby.
Yeah.
I've never had that experience. Oh, I'm going to go wait at the gate.
And I wonder, is that, Steve, do we know, is that the same exact time every day or does it vary by a little bit? Because I would try my best if I could to pace myself to get there at that exact moment.
I
that
think
is the best
they do like a manual check of the lane, so it probably varies.
Oh, that's too
time
bad.
To time, but.
And the reversible lanes for people who are wondering what we're talking
and
about.
And then you're stuck in traffic. You're like, they're going to open. They're going to open. Right. They're going to open. Right. You just get past it and they open. Not good.
And any details on this Eisenhower shooting? Was this someone in a car? Or was
two people in a car, and a 22-year-old man was killed, was shot. The bullets went through his SUV. A woman was in his car as well. She was injured. Mm. They left the expressway. So it happened, I believe, up on near Laramie. They were able to leave the expressway, and then Chicago police ran into them on, I think, Flournoy was the street.
Yes, I believe you're right.
Called state police and reported that the driver had been killed in the crash.
Awful.
It's really scary.
Yeah, it is.
I'm not an alarmist. I'm really not. I have learned my lesson. I'm just going to live each day like I live each day. But these expressway shootings are really scary.
Yeah.
And everywhere, every right. expressway. And you just, I don't look at anybody. I don't flip anybody off. I want to get my windows tinted so maybe they won't even think someone's in there. Maybe they'll just think it's a
self-driving
Google car. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good move.
It's a little freaky.
It's very, very scary.
All right. Well, thank you for that information. Coming up, we're going to talk about what's going on in New Jersey as a train ran into the end of what did it hit?
Well,
the
it hit
station?
The station. Yeah. Yeah. And they're just reporting at least one fatality. Originally, they were saying nearly 100 injured, but no fatalities. But that's changed as of the last half hour. So there's a reporter out there in New Jersey who will give us the lowdown on exactly what's happening. Dean Richards will join us at 11:35. So stick around. We have a lot more planned for you. It's Bill Leffin, it's Wendy Snyder on WGN. I'm curious about something.
What are you, Curious George?
I am. I'm like Curious George in a lot of ways.
Little monkey.
All right, so the first episode of Saturday Night Live for the season is on this Saturday, and they're now showing commercials that are Clinton versus Trump. They're kind of reminiscent of the debate commercials. And Hillary Clinton is played by, I'm blanking on her name.
Kate McKinnon.
Kate McKinnon, thank
Who's
you very
awesome,
much.
Who's awesome, by the way.
Yeah, she does a nice job.
She's a better Hillary than Hillary is. She really is.
Seems more like Hillary Clinton than Hillary Clinton does. Yes. Now, the part of Donald Trump last year was played by two different people, Taryn Killam, who's no longer with the show, and Daryl Hammond, who was with the show for years and years and years and then went away. And now he's mostly the announcer on the show. But he does, I think, the best Donald Trump of anybody I've ever seen. He's an incredible impressionist. And his Donald Trump
is
really accurate.
It's dead on, rather.
So they've decided, Saturday Night Live has decided, that the role of Donald Trump, at least on this Saturday, and I don't know how much going forward, but I got to think with some regularity, will be played by Alec Baldwin, who is also a very good impressionist. But Daryl Hammond is like the best that's ever been, especially when it comes to Donald Trump. So why wouldn't, if you already have him in your stable, and they do, why wouldn't they just let him be Donald Trump?
I have the answer.
Why?
I completely have the answer. It just came to me.
What is it?
In a premonition.
Oh.
Because Daryl Hammond is going to come out as Bill Clinton. And he does a great Bill Clinton.
He has done both. I mean, you know, you make the scenes as such so he wouldn't have to be both characters at the same time, although they've done that in the past too. There have been guys who have played more than one role. Dana Carvey for a while was H. Ross Perot and George Bush.
That's right.
Original Recipe, and what they would do is they would make it so that he could play them both. He would pre-tape some and do the others live.
Well, I have a feeling they're going to have it, you know, in the debate setting, and Alec Baldwin probably has some choice words to say about Trump and wanted to do it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Bill Clinton is going to come out to support his wife.
But he wasn't a factor in the actual debate. He wasn't, I don't remember even seeing him except maybe at the very beginning or the very end.
Well, he was there, wasn't he?
He was there, but he wasn't really much of a factor. I think they went out of their way to keep him a non-factor.
Yeah, but this isn't like recreating the debate entirely. They're going to try and make something funny. Like maybe Bill Clinton will come out and go, hey, don't be so rude to her. And I think Daryl Hammond does a better Bill Clinton than as Trump.
it just seems like for some reason they're holding something against Daryl Hammond, because last year they had him. He was there last year, and they had Taron Killam do it for a little while until they realized
very good.
No, and he's a good impressionist too, but
he didn't have it.
It wasn't the best Trump.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that, Richard. Do you have an idea?
Well, I didn't catch that last couple seconds you guys were talking about, but Alec Baldwin has signed a contract to do it long, which could be only until like November if he loses the election, or for the entire season if he becomes president. And they're doing the same thing that they did with Larry David doing Bernie Sanders last year. Whenever they need him, he's going to be there. You know, if something happens during the week, he's going to be there and he's going to do a skit. It'll usually be a cold open.
Yeah.
So it'll be, you know, right at 10:30. And then he may, you know, take off and leave after that. Because I think he's doing a performance on Broadway. So he's going to be there. He's in New York. He lives in New York. So, but he's made himself available to it because he is good friends with Lorne Michaels. And he's posted more than anybody else, including Steve Martin. And he's done all sorts of guest spots on there, even when he hasn't been the host. So it's going to be good. And I think that what Wendy makes a good point. Even though Daryl Hammond is a good impressionist, they're probably going to need somebody to be able to do Bill Clinton, when the time comes, when it's needed. So, you know, they'll have him there.
I have another theory, Richard. Check this one out. Maybe they'll have Daryl Hammond come on as Donald Trump, too, because everybody's talking about the Trump double. So maybe there will be two Donald Trumps.
Well, they did that last year. Remember when Donald...
last year when he hosted, they had both Daryl and Taron Killam. So there were three of them as Trump standing up there. So they could do that again. They repeat skits all the time, so they could do it again.
All right, very good. Wow, great insight, Richard. Thank you.
How do you
appreciate
know all
it.
This, Richard? Are you an SNL insider?
I've spoken to you guys before. I told you. I grew up in Englewood. I was a latchkey kid. By the time I was 7 years old, I'd be home by myself. I literally watched 7 hours of TV every day.
Oh, I remember.
Nine of Something Good was on, and I've watched Saturday Night Live since its very first season. It's one of my favorite shows, and I follow a lot of stuff like that. So,
thank you, Richard. You know. We appreciate it. Thanks so much. Have a great rest of the week.
Thanks. Take care, guys. Appreciate
it. Thank you, Richard.
I would just feel bad if I was Daryl Hammond when you know you have some ability and you're just there and you go, hey, put me in, coach. I can do this.
And they know he can do it. I'm puzzled with that, too. But, I mean, now remember, he was let go from the show and then he came back as just... The announcer.
Right.
So maybe, I don't know why they'd sign a contract to have Alec Baldwin.
I guess it's more star power. It probably looks better if you're bringing in somebody like Alec Baldwin. But wouldn't you, Daryl Hammond, wouldn't you just go, oh, come on, I'm right here. You couldn't let me do it?
I think he's just happy to be back.
Oh, maybe.
I mean, because I thought it was weird they brought him back just to be the announcer.
Yeah.
That seemed strange to me.
Yeah, like they could use him for more. He's really talented. It's strange.
I wish they'd bring Canteen Boy back with Alec Baldwin and was it Adam Sandler?
Yeah.
That was so uncomfortable.
Yep, every time.
I loved it, though.
A quick break, and then we'll find out. We'll give you an update on what's going on in New Jersey. ABC's Brad Melke is on the scene to fill us in. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
And breaking news this morning in New Jersey, reportedly one person dead and 100 injured. We go to ABC News correspondent Brad Melke, who is in New Jersey at the moment. Good morning, Brad.
Hello.
All right. What is the update on what we know at this point?
Well, we know at least 70 injured, although we've heard numbers higher than that, around 100. We know that one person is dead, and we know that, you know, there are many critical injuries, so we'll see if that death toll sadly ends up rising out of this. And we do not know what exactly caused this crash. We know that the train was basically going full tilt as it entered this terminus in Hoboken. This is a place where commuters generally pass through to get through to New York to do their jobs. It was packed full of people, 250 people on the train, more people on the platform and in the terminal. This train comes roaring and slams into a platform and knocks down a support beam. It actually caused part of the roof to collapse. So now I see men in hard hats sort of debating whether or not this structure is even safe to be near. But we don't know what caused it. And the NTSB is arriving on scene, and they'll sort of do a look at all the different things that could be at the heart of all of this.
Now, I know there have been numerous reports of witnesses who said usually this train kind of strolls into the station. It slows down with it coming in at a full rate of speed. Is anybody talking about perhaps the engineer had fallen asleep or something?
Yeah, so I mean, the things they'll look at, as always, with the NTSB, they'll look at maintenance, they'll look at technical issues, but human error will definitely be something they're taking a look at. Now, the engineer, I talked to an eyewitness who was in the first car of the train, and she said the engineer went through the window, that his face was completely bloody. They could barely tell if he was dead or alive, apparently. We now know that Governor Christie has confirmed that he's alive. So we will be waiting to hear more from that engineer when he is able to sort of talk to investigators. The other thing that they still haven't ruled out necessarily is foul play. Everyone is looking at this certainly as just a horrible accident, and investigators don't really expect there to be anything purposeful involved. But again, something they haven't ruled out yet. So it's all just speculation at this point.
Brad, do you know anything about any sort of a safety break or a safety catch? You would think that it would be equipped in a situation like that, coming into a train, heavily populated train station, that there'd be something that would kick in if it was going too fast. Do you know anything about that?
You know, I actually don't know which safety measures they have at this particular train station. I know that is part of it. And you know, as you point out, this is a terminus. This is not there was no open end of this train track for the train to continue on to. You know, so this was a place where you stop and then you go back the other way, which made this collision all the more sort of traumatic with this. It was just slamming into a wall, essentially.
Do you know if we mentioned somewhere between 7 to 100 injuries and possibly more? They're still trying to sort that out. Do you know if the bulk of those are people that were on the train or at the station itself, or just a combination?
It does. In fact, passengers on the train seem to think that of the fellow passengers they saw coming out, that the vast majority of the injured were people in that first car, even. So that is what we're looking at right now. Is there could have been people that were hurt on the platform or in the building, but it seemed clear that that train going from full tilt to full stop really did most of the damage.
It's pretty terrible to look at and see all this. And obviously you will keep us posted, and we will keep the listeners posted on any developments that come up, because there are, as you mentioned, critical injuries as well, and that death toll may rise. Mm. Thank you very much, Brad. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks, Brad. Brad Melke again from ABC News on the scene in Hoboken, New Jersey, of a horrible train crash that took place earlier today. So far, one confirmed dead, and you hear numbers in the 70s and then up into the low 100s, just over 100. That hasn't been sorted out yet, but as the day goes on, I'm sure we'll get a more definite number on injuries.
It sure seems like it is operator error. And you mentioned a good thing about the safety that would kick in, but how does that happen if no one's there to kick it into gear?
Well,
like a GPS type of thing once it passes a certain, that's a great idea.
I know this because of what I've seen on television shows and movies, so I don't know exactly how accurate this is, but it seems like whenever they're in a situation like this where a train could potentially do what it did today, which is crash into a building, the station, the terminus, there's always, if it's at a certain speed, as it reaches a certain point, it automatically shuts it down, you know, so that you don't have what happened today. I would imagine if it's in movies and television shows, I would imagine there's some version of that in real life, I would think.
Well, it makes sense. You have a GPS chip, and if you're going a certain rate of speed when you cross that, like, GPS point.
It's a kill switch, right? Wouldn't you think? I would imagine.
Hey, if you and I can sit here and talk about this and think about it, there has to be.
People in the business must be, yeah.
And, I mean, you know, operator error happens a lot. I'm not saying you can't trust all people, but
right. There
are accidents.
Right.
This happened around 8:45 a.m. their time, correct? Not our time.
Yeah, it says 8:45. Yeah, they must be going East Coast time in the story.
First car pretty well destroyed. The whole roof was caved in. The seats were broken. A lot of witnesses were reporting a lot of blood on the scene.
Have you seen, I don't know if the story you're looking at is showing the pictures. I saw a video of it earlier today. It's horrendous.
It is so scary.
Yeah.
The train went over the bumper block through the depot, came to rest at the wall right before the station's waiting area. And many people just saying the worst thing they've ever seen. Rail service was suspended into and out of the station. which runs between Manhattan and New Jersey. Local buses and ferries were accepting New Jersey train tickets as a result of the accident.
And
this is rush hour too. This
I was
is
just
like
gonna
the
say,
worst time.
There's no good time for something like this to happen. But when you think about the volume of people there, because it's rush hour, it's magnified so dramatically.
All right, Bob might know what we're talking about. Good morning, Bob.
Hi guys, how you doing today?
Good.
Fine, thanks.
Okay, it's called Smart Train, and what it is. It's just as you're talking, it's kind of a GPS wireless setup that is designed, and just as you say, as a train passes a particular point, if it goes past this fail-safe speed or whatever, it does exactly what you were talking about. It stops the train. Right now it's being heavily installed in the corridor between Washington and New York.
Yeah.
It's kind of a, because after the last big accident out there, because there again, the operator took the corner at too fast of a speed.
Right.
It's basically designed to slow the train down or actually bring it to a complete stop.
Bob, can I ask you something really quick? By the way you worded it, that it's now being heavily installed, does that indicate that there's a chance that in this station in Hoboken, it may not have been installed yet?
It may not have been installed. I mean, it's a very, very costly system. I mean, you got to put the tracking devices in the car. You put the tracking devices along the track. So it's a very, and you know, the Department of Transportation is spending a great deal of money on that.
Yeah,
but it's all like, for instance, like in Chicago when on the L, if the operator takes his hand off the control level, the train stops.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and in some cases that's how it's set up. But the smart train is basically to take the operator error out of it altogether. It controls the train automatically, brings it to a.
Do you know if here in Chicago, like, say, Ogilvy Transportation Center, do they have a system in place? You mentioned if he takes his hand off of it, but is there something like what you just said, the smart train system, where it would automatically, if it was going X amount of miles per hour, that it would automatically turn it down? Do you know if that's already in place here?
I don't know if that's coming in place yet in the Ogilvy or whatever. I know there's supposedly mandatory, slow down points or whatever, of course, with the lights, the red and the green and the yellow,
sure.
Those kinds of things. But I don't think we're here yet in Chicago, because I think right now the money is being spent out east because of that big, heavy rail corridor between Washington and New York.
Yeah.
There's something that was posted August 6th of this year, and they did it in California in Petaluma. The startup route costs about $450 million. So it is very expensive. And they had their maiden voyage in California's North Bay area, Sonoma County Vineyards, back in August of this year. So I don't know that we have this yet, although there has to be some safeguards. You have things in your car now that, alert you as to when to brake.
Mm-hmm.
It can park the car for you, for gosh sakes. Mm-hmm. So you would imagine that there would be some kind of alarm or something if it's hitting a speed, maybe not a smart train where it's going to stop, but an alarm that goes off if it's coming in too quickly at the station.
Yeah.
We'll find out.
I'm sure there's all those kinds of things already in the cab of the train. It's just, you're dealing with the potential for operator error, and that's, for the most part, that's the biggest cause in most rail accidents is operator error or somebody bypassing the gate.
And not even falling asleep. I mean, imagine if he had some kind of medical condition that caused him to pass out, an alarm going off is not going to help him hit the button to stop.
Exactly. And that's, that's all part of the fact that, we don't have two guys, in the engine anymore and all that
right.
kind of stuff.
All right. Well, thank you for your info, Bob. We appreciate it. It's called the Smart Train. Thank you.
Yep.
You're a smart caller.
Thanks, Bob.
Thanks.
All right. As the day progresses, I know everybody up in the news department is working feverishly to keep you up to date, so you'll hear more about it as the day goes on. Stay where you are. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
One of my favorite guests of the week.
That would be Dean Richards, Wendy. Dean Richards is here to talk about show business.
Oh, no, I thought it was somebody else scheduled.
No, it's Dean. Don't say that. Oh, no. Dean, are you all right?
I thought, wow, I got bumped. They got somebody good.
No, it's you. We wouldn't
bump you. I thought
they
got Tom Dreesen.
Oh, don't.
Oh, yes, do.
It's not a day
Slowly
for that.
Slowly I turn.
It's not a day to say
step
that.
Step by step. I did not hear what happened.
Can I?
I mean, I heard that you mentioned Tom Dreesen's name to Tommy Lasorda.
Right.
And the sky actually turned black.
I have
Lightning
heard.
Lightning struck.
It was worse than that.
But I don't know. What did Lasorda do?
I have heard over the years Tom Dreesen talk glowingly about Tommy Lasorda. Tom Dreesen loves baseball, and of course he's a Cubs fan, and he's always talked about how he and Frank Sinatra and Dennis Franz and Dennis Farina and Dennis the Menace would get together with Tommy Lasorda and have a great time.
He did. He mentioned Tommy Lasorda at the evening with Tom Dreesen that I hosted at the Broadcasting Museum on Tuesday night.
Was it in glowing terms,
glowing
I hope?
Terms.
All right, so you would assume, because everything you've ever heard has been positive, so Tommy Lasorda is in on Steve's show this morning. Dave and Andrea interviewed him. And then as he's leaving, I just thought, hey, here's my only chance to say hi to Tommy Lasorda. So I go over and I just say, hey, it's great to meet you, sir. I'm a big fan of yours. I'm going on. And I go, and we have a mutual friend in common. And he goes, oh, who's that? And I go, Tom Dreesen. And he gets all beet red and he starts swearing like crazy. Oh, that blanking, blanking, blanky,
wow.
Blank. And he told me a story about how he gave him a jersey and Tom didn't acknowledge it and wore a Cubs jersey on TV. And I feel terrible. I upset Tommy Lasorda.
I don't think that's that hard to do, quite honestly.
I don't know about Tommy Lasorda, I love that story.
But now, I felt awful.
Dean, when you interview people, which you do all the time, do you bring up mutual friends or do you wonder? Because what we hear on the air and on TV could be different from real life.
Yeah, I've learned through experiences like Bill just had. That I've stopped doing it because you just never. Number one, you never know if they really know each other. Or
right.
Somebody was dropping a name.
Right.
Right.
So, you know, somebody said I'm friends with them, and then they turned out not to be, and you wind up looking like a dope for bringing up somebody's name, and they don't even know them. So you know, you wind up looking uninformed.
But Dean, you know what? And Wendy even brought this up earlier. Just because of the years I did stand up and then through this show and other shows like this one, I've met a bunch of people and I've interviewed a bunch of people. So sometimes I'll go, hey, you know who we just had on?
Right.
A friend, a guy that you worked with. Right. And it almost always ends well.
Right. Some of the time it works out well.
Not today.
Because I've done the same thing where I've interviewed somebody who co-starred with somebody in the same movie.
Right.
And I'll say, oh, I just interviewed, so-and-so who you were with in such-and-such a movie. And you can tell instantly whether they actually liked that person or they didn't like that person. So
sure.
Now when I go in, I tell them I don't know anybody that you know.
We have no one in common.
Nothing.
Zero.
I just got here from another country. I'm not even 100% sure who you are.
Now, can I ask your opinion on something? Because I said to Wendy.
I wouldn't feel bad, though, Bill, if I were you.
I feel bad.
You were just nothing but well-intentioned and being
But I upset
polite.
Tommy Lasorda. He's 88
that's
years
his,
old. And
that's
he,
his problem, though.
Oh, man. All right, now tell me this part of it.
He should have been more polite to you.
He was very polite to me. He really was.
Until you mentioned
Until
Tom.
Until I mentioned
and
that.
And then I feel bad for Tom Dreesen, because if he's listening, or this is going to get
have
back to
him. Have you
not
contacted him yet?
Well, that's what I was just going to ask
him.
You. I said to Wendy, can we, at some point in the show today, can we call Tom Dreesen and I'll tell him? Because I want it to come from me. I want to tell him what happened, and Wendy goes, oh, don't.
No, I'm the one who said we need to get him on the air.
Yeah?
Yeah, we should.
All right.
I think you should, too.
All right. At some point today.
Okay, here's his phone number.
Go ahead, give it out.
818.
All right. Now,
oh, God.
Since we're talking about people that
I have a cell phone number. Should we call him?
Yes.
Let's call him. During the break, I'll give the phone number to the producer, and...
Oh, man.
Let's call him.
I'm so afraid of how he's going to take this.
Let's put him on the air without telling him. I hear people love that.
No, people don't love that. We've heard,
especially if you're an elected official. I hear people love stuff like that.
We've heard the opposite. All right, tell me this. Speaking of knowing somebody through channels, here I thought about you, and here's why. Last week we got the news that Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie broke up, and that
made
headlines.
Let's call them.
No, don't call them. Don't call them.
You have their number. I'll call them.
Don't call them. But then the other day we find out that Naomi Watts and Liev Schreiber broke up. Now, here's what I want to ask, because I know you've interviewed some of the biggest A-listers in show business.
All of them.
Has Liev Schreiber ever come close to even smiling by accident?
He is a very serious person.
Very serious.
I'm not going to say he's unfriendly or rude.
Yeah.
Or mean. He just has a very serious demeanor about him.
Because he's such a great actor, and everything he does, every movie, and Ray Donovan he's great in. Yeah. But I thought to myself, if I'm Naomi Watts, and every morning I look at this guy, and he's just scowling all the time, I say to myself, if I wanted to marry a scowling guy, I'd be Donald Trump's wife. I don't need that from you.
Well, I'm going to say she's not a bucket of laughs.
Yes, I don't see her smile that much.
I clearly acknowledge, when I sit down with them, they have their press manners on.
Yeah.
So I don't get the sense, rarely do I get the sense that I'm actually talking to a real person until I've interviewed them 10 or 15, 20 times, whatever, and then you begin to see patterns developing. But both of them, I'm not going to say that they're mean or obnoxious or anything.
Aloof?
They're just, they both have very serious demeanors about them. Everybody knows people like that. They're just they're not, the life of the party kind of people. But when you talk with them about serious subjects and things like that, they're very engaging, they're very polite. Both of them are very nice. I don't know what happened in their relationship, except maybe the other one thought somebody's going to crack a joke after I thought he was going to be the one to crack the joke.
Right.
Maybe I should have brought up Tom Dreesen earlier in the
marriage. That would have fixed it.
That usually breaks the ice in a relationship.
Wouldn't you love to see Liev Schreiber do a Showtime at the Apollo where he just does 45 minutes of stand-up and never even comes close to smiling once?
Is it Liev or Liev? Schreiber.
I've always said Liev.
Liev.
Really?
I've always said Liev, yes.
Maybe
tickling him, Wendy. If you ever meet him, just go up to him and go, gookie, 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 see what happens.
I've tried on his feet once during an interview, and it's a little awkward, but he didn't crack a smile then either.
He's amazing that way. Yeah. He's amazing. All right, let's do this. We'll take a quick break. Dean Richards is here. We'll find out what movies are coming out this weekend. Stay around.
We'll call Tom Dreesen.
Yeah. Do you want to call Tom Dreesen?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah?
You got to tell him what's going on first. So.
All right.
We can get the number off the air and see if he's even available.
Spoil all the fun.
All right.
Dean, I cannot allow you two to do this. I'll leave early.
Tell him I'm calling from the... what was Ed McMahon's sweepstakes?
The Publisher's Clearinghouse.
Tell him it's Dean Richards with Publisher's Clearinghouse.
All right.
They'll certainly take the call.
Oh, yeah, I know he will.
Or Alan
Legally,
Funt.
All we have to do is tell him that he's on the air.
Right. That's it. All right. Mischief ahead.
It would be only funnier if we did it at 3 o'clock in the morning.
2:30. Stick around. More of this next. Bill and Wendy, along with Dean Richards on WGN. It's Bill F. It's Wendy Snyder, and Dean Richards is here. We're trying to right a horrible wrong that I did earlier today. We're trying to call Tom Dreesen.
Yeah, Tom, I'm on with Bill and Wendy right now. I can't talk to you right now. But.
Dean, I called the number you gave us, and Detroit Tigers manager Sparky Anderson answered. What's with that? How did that happen?
It's weird that he...
he was not in.
He changed his mobile number
that
fast.
I don't understand. Isn't that crazy?
Did you try the second one I gave you?
Yeah, we're dialing that second number now to see if maybe he's there. So we're doing everything we can to right the wrong.
I can give you his address. We can send him a little postcard.
I would send him a fruit basket, an apology fruit basket.
Let's send him a telegram. All When's the last time you sent anyone a telegram?
It's been a while. It's been a good long while.
Dear Tom Dreesen, stop.
All right,
in Chicago today. Stop.
I have Tommy Lasorda on the line for Bill now. Hey, Tom, what's going on? We can't say any of that on the air.
No, none of that can be said on air. None of that can be said on air.
All right, well, stay tuned because maybe we'll talk to him later.
I hope so.
This is fantastic.
I hope so. All right, speaking of fantastic, Mrs. Peregrine I've been waiting for this movie for over a year.
I love when Bill changes the subject.
I'm uncomfortable.
Bill thinks he's
going
to change the subject on me.
I'm uncomfortable.
We might have clearance, Clarence.
Oh, really? Do we?
Yes.
All right. They're working on Tom.
Oh, this is fantastic.
I think he is here.
Ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to WGN.
How do you think this will end, Dean? Do you think this will end well or not well?
I think this is going to be end.
I don't think it'll end well.
He wants us to wait 5 minutes because he's in the shower.
Oh.
I want to talk to a naked Tom Dreesen if you want to know the truth.
We got 5 minutes.
Da 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 da.
South Side, Chicago's very own. Tally off right now.
Yep.
He looks fantastic, by the way.
Tom Dreesen does look fantastic.
We had a very nice evening at the broadcasting at the Museum of Broadcast Communication. It was an evening with Tom Dreesen, and
it was just the other night.
It was. It was this past Tuesday night.
Yeah.
We talked about his career growing up in Harvey, Illinois, shining shoes as a kid.
All right, stand by, Dean. We go live to the shower with Tom Dreesen.
Fantastic.
Tom, how are you?
Tom, are you there?
I'm in the shower.
Oh.
I took the shower off, and I'm shivering.
Oh, no. But it reminds you of Chicago, doesn't it? I mean, that's how Chicago is.
It does.
Yeah, you're wet and you're cold. Yep.
All right, Bill, go.
All right, Tom, very quickly, and Dean Richards is here, too.
Hi,
I think
Tom.
You know Dean.
Hi, Tommy.
Well, you know, first of all, I'm glad Dean's on because, you know, got so busy the other night, I didn't get a chance to really thank him, you know, for what. Dean, thank you so much. You did a masterful, wonderful job, and it wouldn't have been as good as it turned out without you. And
my pleasure. We had a great time, and if somebody would have told me after that wonderful night at the museum that we would be talking to you naked just 2 days later, I would have called them a big fat liar.
Sure.
Hey Tom, can we FaceTime right now?
My face
is up here.
Wow. All right, so
a whole lot of listeners.
All right, Bill, we don't have a lot of time, so you have to get to the point here.
Very quickly, Tom, here's what happened here at WGN this morning. Tommy Lasorda was a guest on the morning show, and I have heard you for years and years and years talk about your friendship with Tommy Lasorda. I'm a fan of his, longtime Dodger manager. And I said to him, Mr. Lasorda, my name's Bill Leff. I host a show here on WGN. It's an honor to meet you. Boy, what a career you've had. You look great. I go, we have a mutual friend in common, Tom Dreesen. And he turned really, really beet red, and he started swearing. And he said that, and then a bunch of words that I can't say. And then he said, one time I gave him a Dodgers jersey, and he wouldn't wear it. He would only wear a Cubs jersey and never even thanked me for the jersey. And then he kept on swearing and swearing. What happened?
Give it to him, Tommy.
All right, well, he one time gave me a Dodger jersey, and I wouldn't wear it.
That's it. But that's true, right?
No. You know what happened?
What?
I don't remember him giving me a Dodger jersey. But the truth is, Tommy Lasorda, this is the truth. Years ago, Steve Garvey had a charity in L.A. For multiple sclerosis. And because, you know, that's my charity because of my sister,
yep.
I went and I did some stand-up comedy years ago. That's how I met Tommy Lasorda. He came up to me afterward and said, hey, really enjoyed the show. I've seen you on The Tonight Show. You ever want to come to Dodger Stadium, let me know. And so I did. And I went several times. I'm assuming if he saw me on The Tonight Show, he knew I'm a Chicago boy.
Yeah.
But I went to several games as his guest, and went in the locker room afterward, and we had a good time. I took Dave Letterman back there to be in the locker room with him when Dave was brand new, you know. Anyhow, he sees me on The Tonight Show wearing a Cubs jacket, you know, doing a routine about the Cubs, and it upset him. And he was always upset the fact that I was a Cub fan. And I finally told him one time, I said, Tommy, you know, I'm a Cub fan. I've been a Cub fan all my life. And you live out here in L.A. now. You know, you live out here in L.A. with the Dodgers. And I said, Tommy, if somebody ever told you they used to be a Cub fan, but they're not anymore, they never were a Cub fan.
Right.
Because once a fan, always a fan. So we always had this riff, and it got really – in fact, one time I told him, I said, look, if you're in Las Vegas and Don Rickles is one side of the street and I'm on the other side of the street, who are you going to go see? He said, you're not comparing yourself to Rickles. I said, no, but I'm not going to get mad at you if you're going to see Rickles.
God, this is like entertainment tonight.
Oh,
this
no.
is awesome.
You have made my week, Tom.
So there's no, on your behalf, Tom, there's no bad blood between you and Tommy Lasorda. It's all in his mind, right? You're not mad at him.
No, I'm not. And I think he's a good old guy. You know, here's the other thing, too. Up in Toronto, we were still having a riff. I was up in Toronto emceeing a big sports banquet. And they had Hurricane Carter and all these, you know, Canadian athletes. But they were honoring Tommy as well. each star that I had to introduce, sports star, there was a video preceding that. Well, everybody I introduced, and I was going to be polite to Tommy as a master of ceremonies, every video worked, but when it came to him, his video didn't work, and I was hung out to dry. So I just started ad-libbing. What a great manager, what a great motivator. This man could take an average ball player and turn him into a great ball player by his spirit. Mm-hmm. And I went through, and finally they realized the video wasn't going to come on. So when I finished with his introduction, he got a standing ovation. Now, he knew that I was hung out to dry. The audience didn't know that, but he knew that. And so afterward, we went out to a little Italian restaurant across the street, and we had a nice talk. And I've always thought we've been friends since then. And, I mean, I say friends. We're never going to be real friends.
Until this morning.
Wow. Yeah.
Everything I told you, though, was the truth. You know?
Well, we thank you for clearing this up, and sorry to interrupt your shower.
But, Tom, who do you hate, though? if I were going to mention a name to you that would set you off on a swearing jag, what name would that be?
I can't think of my company commander in boot camp. I'm only upset with politically correct police, whoever they are. No one ever knows. We keep apologizing, but we have no idea who they are. You know, so that they upset me. Other than that, you know.
I'll tell you what. That's why I was so surprised when I heard about this morning, because I've known Tom for decades and decades. I have never heard anyone say a bad word about Tom Dreesen.
No, of course not.
He's the nicest guy in the world. I can't imagine anybody having that reaction, which, Bill, I imagine is why you didn't even think twice in mentioning Tom's
That's
name.
That's exactly right.
Because who doesn't like Tom Dreesen?
I know.
And it's a rivalry thing going.
Right.
So that's
good-natured
that's
rivalry.
What it is.
Relax
it's
with the
good-natured
rivalry.
It's not so good-natured from Tommy Lasorda, though.
Wow.
That poor guy. Well, I wish
poor guy.
Thank you for clearing this up, and really, thank you for taking our call when you're in the shower. That's a really nice guy.
Have you air dried yet?
No, yeah, I have. And, you know, when next time you see me and I'm sneezing, you'll know why.
All right, well, get back in. The water's warm. Thank you, Tom.
Thanks, Tom.
Tommy's doing a...
Dean, once again, God bless you, Dean.
Oh, my God. It was such a nice night. It was my honor to be with you and listen to you share those stories. As I told people afterwards, I said, there is a one-of-a-kind comedian right there. You know, we had a sit-down conversation and talked, and then we took questions from the audience. And, you know, Tommy was getting, like, a little more into his stand-up mode and working the crowd and a little more ad libby and all that. And I was like, this is a one-of-a-kind comedian. Mm. They don't make comedians like this anymore. He's just, you're an amazing guy. Personally, professionally, and naked.
Yes, I'll second that.
Best comedian I've ever talked to naked.
How about that? It's unanimous.
Oh, that's my next album.
Tom, thank you. Enjoy the rest of your shower.
Okay, take
all right,
care.
That's Tom Dreesen,
thank you,
everybody.
Tom. What a great sport, and he answers while in the shower.
I feel like the Henry Kissinger of WGN right now.
You are the Henry
We've
Kissinger.
Brought these, yep. these opposing forces together.
Bagan and Sadat are friends again.
Do you feel better now?
I feel
We got to get Lasorda on the line.
I want to make Tommy Lasorda feel good. That's my
He's gonna
thing.
He's going to punch you if you show up again.
I know
what
he would.
What if you get Dreesen and Lasorda together?
Yes.
On the phone?
Yes.
A summit?
Yes.
To resolve, you know, settle this once and for all.
I'm in for
Come
that.
Come on, Lasorda. Life's too short to carry around grudges like this because he wore the wrong jersey.
I know. It was 25 years ago.
Can't we all get along?
Can't we all just get
Can't
along,
we
Dean?
All just well, get along.
What a great live entertainment report today,
this
Dean. We thank you so much.
Way better than the movies that are opening
this week. Far better.
Actually, Deepwater Horizon, pretty good, the Mark Wahlberg movie. That's probably the best one of the week. Miss Peregrine, okay.
Yeah.
Masterminds, the new Zach Galifianakis film, not screened for the critics.
That's a bad
apparently sign. The only person who likes that is Tommy Lasorda.
Oh, good. Dean, thank you.
Thanks, right. Deaner.
Bye. Very enjoyable. That's Dean Richards from WGN TV News. We'll take a quick break. Thank you, Kim. Hi, everybody. It's part two of our show. Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder here on WGN. 312-981-7200 is, of course, the phone number, of course, and the text line.
Right, you can do either or.
Either or. I want to play some audio for you that I think you'll enjoy. Here is the setup to this audio. For weeks now, let me correct myself, for months now, whenever you or me or a caller or a guest or anybody says, hey, with this big election coming up, here's the problem, I'm not happy with the two candidates. I don't really like Donald Trump. I don't really care for Hillary Clinton. And then you give a reason that you don't like one or both of them. Somebody invariably will text us or call in and say, you know, they're not the only two candidates. You've got Gary Johnson and you've got Jill Stein. Why don't you guys ever mention Gary Johnson? Why don't you ever mention Jill Stein? Well, Gary Johnson has had over the last couple of weeks one or two miscues. Aleppo being the top one. When asked about Aleppo, he didn't know what Aleppo was, and that made people say, well, if he doesn't know about that, what else doesn't he know about? And then last week, they asked him about, you know, there were a couple of incidents on the East Coast, bombings in New York, New Jersey, and he said something to the effect of, I'm not quoting directly, but thank goodness nobody was injured, even though there were many people injured. Somehow Gary Johnson wasn't
so
up on
unaware?
That. I've asked myself that same question, and other people have asked that same question. If you're running for president, even though it is a 24-hour job to be up on everything, and nobody can be up on everything, but if you're the president, you think major things like a war-torn city or a bombing here domestically would be something you'd be up on. Let me play you some audio from last night. He was appearing on a town hall interview on MSNBC, and Chris Matthews asked him a question that I would hope almost anybody running for the office of president would know, but Gary Johnson didn't seem to know. Here's last night from MSNBC. Listen in.
Who's your favorite foreign leader?
Who's my favorite?
Any, just name anywhere in the country, any one of the continents, any country. Name one foreign leader that you respect and look up to. Anybody.
Mine was Shimon Peres.
Okay, I'm talking about living. Go ahead. You got to do this anywhere, any continent. Canada, Mexico, Europe over there, Asia, South America, Africa, name a foreign leader that you respect.
I guess I'm having an Aleppo moment in the former president of Mexico.
But I'm giving you the whole world.
I know.
Anybody in the world you like. Anybody. Pick any leader.
The former president of Mexico.
Which one?
I'm having a brain.
Well, name anybody.
Fox.
Fox. Okay, who's your favorite foreign leader? Get him off the hook. Name a foreign leader you respect.
He was terrific.
Any foreign leader?
Merkel.
Okay, Merkel. Okay, fine. Save yourself. Can't argue with that. Anyway, let's go.
God, is that embarrassing?
It's incredibly embarrassing.
I'm not saying I know. I didn't know what Aleppo was. I didn't. I admitted it.
Yeah.
I had to look it up.
Yeah.
I am not running for president.
Right. Right. But, all right, so putting that one aside,
oh
that one was unfortunate.
God.
But when Chris Matthews or somebody says, just name
the
a foreign
world.
Leader, you don't think of Cameron in England. He finally got Merkel with some help from a friend. He got Angela
Vincente
Merkel his
Fox.
Name. But that was also his friend. That was another guy sitting next to him.
God.
That was his running mate sitting next to him who says, Vicente. Okay, so with some help, he got one of them. But, Abe in Japan, Trudeau in Canada. The list goes on and on and on and on.
I don't know Abe
in
Japan, sorry.
But how could he not just, one of them.
He's running for president.
Right.
That's why he should know it.
Right.
Oh, my God.
So,
how do you do foreign policy if you don't know who
you're
talking to?
If you don't know the names of the people you're working with. I understand the disenchantment because I share it of not really being thrilled with either candidate. I totally understand it. And I understand when people say, hey, those aren't the only two people running. There's other two people. But this is one of the other guys who's running. This is another alternative, a guy who can't name a single world leader, doesn't know a war-torn city in another land, doesn't know that people have been injured in a domestic bombing.
Did you hear him talking to NBC reporter Casey Hunt, I think it was last week, about the debates?
No.
He said, it's important for me to be on the debate floor, on the set with the other two. He says, it doesn't really matter what I say.
Oh, no.
It's just a matter of me being there to show that I am an alternative. And then he goes, I could talk with my tongue sticking out the whole time.
What?
He actually did that in an interview.
Oh, no.
He said, I could talk with my tongue sticking out. He continued to talk that way, saying that wouldn't matter. It's just a matter that I'm on the stage.
There is no way he wants to be president.
You have to Google it.
I'll look it up. I want to see this.
Look at the reaction of the reporter because she literally is taken aback. Like she moves back in her chair.
All right, let's say, because I was one of the people who wanted him to be on the debates. I thought that, no, if he's a major, I shouldn't even say major party candidate, if he's an alternative party candidate, maybe he should be in the debates. But what if during the debates they asked that question about a world leader and he couldn't name a single one?
It would be awesome audio for us.
It would, yeah.
And why not Jill Stein then, too?
Well, she's not polling nearly as well. She's not even close.
Wasn't she at the debates and they forced her to leave?
Yes, she was escorted out, wasn't she?
She tried to make a scene, but that, frankly, that's because she's not getting attention anywhere else, really.
Right.
But with Johnson and his running mate, William Weld, and I've said this to you guys, they're both, you know, very respected governors. They were former Republican governors. And William Weld, especially, I mean, he's just got to be shaking his head.
I know.
Because, you know, during that interview last night, Chris Matthews goes, Governor Weld, bail him out. He goes, okay, how about Merkel? You know, I mean, he just had him at the tip of his tongue.
But almost anybody in the country, those of us running for president and those of us not running for president, could name just one world leader.
Yeah.
Just one.
It was uncomfortable. The former president of Mexico.
Right.
Wow.
Right.
Hi, Pat.
Hi, how are you guys?
Good.
Fine, Pat. What's up?
Just a quick comment. I mean, a lot of time, and I'm not a libertarian or, you know, supporter of the Sked Jets or anything, but a lot of times what I see, and this is across the board for Trump, Hillary, this guy, Jetson, celebrities, movie stars, when there is a high-powered news person interviewing them or a reporter, and this guy particularly, what's his name, Johnson? Is that the
Gary Johnson? Yes. Part? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he's obviously, you know, not suited for what he's running for because he really can't think fast on his feet. But Chris Matthews was really firing at him, and the only concern that I have is, sometimes a news reporter or interviewer, if they see an easy prey to make look inept or something else, at their expense, they try to make themselves as a reporter look good.
Okay.
And it happens across the board.
I thought that was a great question by Chris Matthews.
And Matthews was pretty aggressive with him. He's like, come on, you got to answer this. You got to have one. I mean, so.
But he doesn't have one?
But you're right in that, but exactly. You should be able to come up with one leader.
Yeah, and I agree that he should have, which speaks to his qualifications to be the nation's commander-in-chief. So that's not the point. We know that that's not going anywhere, but I believe that entire interview was more beneficial for Mr. Matthews than it was for the candidate. And he made himself look a real, like he's a hot interviewer or reporter at the expense of another person's very timid or tentative personality.
But Pat, don't you think it's up to the discretion of the interviewer? He can be more aggressive. Chris Matthews has a reputation of being an aggressive interviewer. But at that point, I think he was just kind of amazed that a man who's running for the office of the presidency couldn't name a single world leader.
I mean, it's just this side of what's your favorite color.
Yeah.
Right. And you know what? And that came out that the man is not qualified to do the job. I mean, that was an instantaneous, if you think at all, if you have any independent thinking, that was an instantaneous decision on the part of the audience, the listener, whoever's listening to the radio or the TV or whatever it is. However, I think that, I sell for a living and I talk fast to people that talk fast, and then people that I know might be a little bit less, quick on the draw or whatever it is.
Sure.
I'll talk slower. I'll let them talk. I'll let them give them some time to mull over the question or my comments or whatever they are, and I'm not going to fire at them like, an AK-47 that's got 100 rounds coming out in a minute.
But Gary Johnson agreed to be on the show, and I don't think this was an unfair question of someone running for president of the United States of America.
Do you remember 16 years ago, I think it was, when George Bush was asked the question about the leaders of Azerbaijan, I think, and Uzbekistan? There were three countries that are not, you know, principal countries in our sphere.
Yeah.
And he, I don't know if he had trouble naming them or what, or if he did eventually, and there was this big controversy, was it an unfair question? I mean, that's saying, who's the leader of Tajikistan? Today they're saying, name any leader.
Name one.
I mean, it's very different.
Yeah, I don't think that the question was unfair at all. That's not my point. The point is the mode, the style, whatever it was. I think Mr. Matthews should have been a little less aggressive and maybe
all right.
Maybe let you know what I'm saying.
Sure,
you guys do a great job. Thanks for letting me say something.
Well, sure, Pat.
We appreciate it, Pat. Let's do this. I want to make another comparison to this that I think will make sense to most people. We're talking about Gary Johnson yesterday on MSNBC not being able to name a single world leader. Is that a problem? Are you okay with it? 312-981-7200. Back after this, it's Bill and Wendy, WGN. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. If you're just joining us, we're talking about a moment that took place last night on MSNBC as Chris Matthews interviewed Gary Johnson. And William Weld, they're running for president and vice president. A moment where he asked him to name a world leader, and the results were not as satisfying as they could be. Here's that clip again.
Who's my favorite? Just name anywhere in the country, any one of the continents, any country. Name one foreign leader that you respect and look up to. Anybody.
Mine was Shimon Peres.
I'm talking about living. Go ahead. You got to do this. Anywhere, any continent. Canada, Mexico, Europe over there, Asia, South America, Africa, name a foreign leader that you respect.
I guess I'm having an Aleppo moment in the former president of Mexico.
But I'm giving you the whole world.
I know.
Anybody in the world you like. Anybody. Pick any leader.
The former president of Mexico.
Which one?
I'm having a brain.
Name anybody.
Fox. Fox.
Who's your favorite foreign leader? Get him off the hook. Name a foreign leader you respect.
He was terrific.
Any foreign leader?
Merkel.
Okay, Merkel. Okay, fine. Save yourself. Can't argue with that.
Now, again, he's getting most of those answers fed to him from Weld, his vice presidential candidate, who is sitting next to him. So now we know the job of the vice president is to whisper in the ear of the president, hey, if anyone asks about world leaders, mention Merkel. I'm surprised he didn't say Urkel.
That would have killed.
Here's what it reminds me of. When Katie Couric asked about which magazines or newspapers Sarah Palin read, and she couldn't name a single one. And then everybody the next day said, well, Katie Couric had an agenda. That was one of those what they called a gotcha moment. She was out to ruin her. But she wasn't out to ruin her. Just like Chris Matthews, I don't think was out to ruin Gary Johnson. He was asking a fair question.
And he thought he knew an answer. Wouldn't you have thought that?
Yeah, absolutely.
And to even say, I guess I'm having an Aleppo moment, I wouldn't make fun of that.
Right, he referenced his own error there.
Yeah, and that was really a scary one.
Right. I know, but this one I think is worse.
And he
don't
almost
you?
Said brain fart,
yeah,
but it was like
close.
A brain. I'm having a brain freeze.
You couldn't remember that? Yeah.
If you want another option, I don't know that this is it.
Therein lies the problem, is that for everybody who is disenchanted with the Republican candidate and Democratic candidate and says, if only there was somebody else, wait, there are a couple of minor parties that have, I shouldn't even say minor parties, more independent parties.
They don't have a chance.
I don't think so.
And I know when, you know, people say that. I mean, think about if everyone who's undecided, and I think there's a large conglomerate of people that are undecided.
Right.
If they all put their vote towards Gary Johnson, I mean, but couldn't he win?
He could win, but do you want, let's say this is as hypothetical can be, that's the scenario. Everybody's so disenchanted with Clinton and with Trump that they go, you know what, Gary Johnson, you have my vote. Do you want a guy sitting in the Oval Office that can't name a single other world leader?
Well, no. That's up
pathetic.
Until this Chris Matthews interview, I was wondering.
Yeah, I know.
If
I know.
Everybody did, because everyone goes, oh, you're going to throw away your vote if you vote for him.
Right.
Which I kind of believe as well, but is it really true? Now it is.
Now it's true. Now it is true.
I mean, I feel like this is the one chance he has, really, for the people that are undecided to make a difference, and he is blowing it every time he opens his mouth.
Yeah. Yeah.
When's the next debate?
The next one's the vice presidential debate. That's in a little over a week, right, Steve? When's the vice do we know the date of the vice presidential debate?
We do. We're not supposed to say.
Not supposed to say.
They don't want anyone to watch. No, it's next week. I think it's a Wednesday or Thursday. I'm going to be gone, I know. So.
When's the next presidential?
The
after week after that.
Yeah.
The week after that.
I can't wait for
But
that
if there's
one.
Cubs games on, I'm sorry. I know where my allegiance is going.
Listen, I have not watched any debate when there were 17 people up on stage coming in the clown car, as you said. I never watched it. Now I'm watching it. And I liked what I saw from Hillary on this first one, I got to tell you. So I will keep watching. The vice presidential debate. Who's running again?
That would be Pence versus Kane.
Oh, that's right. I couldn't think of Mike Pence.
And Mike Pence, by the way, said that he thought Donald Trump did very well. You know,
he has to.
I know he does. But he was convinced that he held up very well during the debate.
You make that excuse for me on plenty of occasions.
I think Wendy did really great. She performed bigly.
Yeah, bigly.
Yeah, I heard you talking about that in the Wintrust business lunch yesterday or the other day. And is that a word? Have we decided? I guess it is.
I'm told that it is a word.
But now several people are saying, including Roe, I heard say yesterday, that he may have said big league. But he didn't, right?
No.
He said big league.
I've heard him on other occasions use the word, too.
And that's what got me to thinking, which I don't like to do, as you all know. Thanks, Steve. When Bertrand said it wasn't like a misspeak because he used it more than once.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It is a word, bigly.
That's what I'm told, yeah.
All right. We'll take a quick break. Steve has the news, and then there's a lot more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Thank you, Steve. I have to tell you the truth that you gave us an off-the-air heads-up saying, stand by, there's a death in the news that I think will matter to you.
Did you look it up?
No, we did not.
You begged us not to.
We did not, because we want to hear, you know, when you're kind enough to alert us to the fact that there's a celebrity death coming, we want to be like everybody else and respond accordingly.
Right.
But Wendy and I had we thought it was somebody else, a different celebrity death.
We thought you meant Agnes Nixon, a celebrated creator and writer of television soap operas who introduced uterine cancer, venereal diseases, child abuse, AIDS, and other social terrors into the weekday fantasy worlds of millions of daytime viewers. She died on Wednesday in Rosemont, Pennsylvania. She was 93 years old. I am referring to All My Children. And
Agnes
Guiding
Nixon
Light.
Was the creator of All My Children, Guiding Light, and maybe one or two others, I think, wasn't she?
One Life to Live.
Oh, was that hers too? Yeah.
Yes. The cause was pneumonia resulting from Parkinson's disease, according to her family. In a career that paralleled the rise, enormous popularity, and gradual decline of soap operas in the last half of the 20th century, Ms. Nixon fashioned many of television's most popular daytime shows, drawing on a rich imagination to find the great and small human dramas lurking just below the surface of American life.
I went a period of about 12 to 15 years where I think I saw All My Children almost every day.
12 noon.
Yeah.
I watched it.
And I can't figure out,
late 70s, early 80s?
I started watching it like toward the middle of college, so sophomore or junior year of college. No, I must have started earlier.
Before, because Luke and Laura got married when I was at my first year of Illinois State.
Yeah, it must have been earlier now that I think about it.
It kind of fizzled out after that to me.
Yeah.
Luke and Laura's wedding was really the crux.
That was the pinnacle, wasn't
it?
That was the highlight. I don't remember why I started watching it, but once I was hooked, I was so hooked. Like, we would tape it. I would never miss it.
It was, in my opinion, the hippest of the soap operas.
All My Children was?
Yeah. I mean, Pine Valley was where I wanted to be.
Yeah. But wasn't it cool whenever they would run into somebody in town, like they'd say, Wendy Snyder, what brings you to Pine Valley?
Right.
Like, you would never say that about, like, I lived in Oak Forest. I would never say, Wendy, what brings you to Oak Forest? And arch my eyebrow. But for some reason in Pine Valley, that's what you did when you ran into somebody unexpectedly. Also, I noticed that whenever somebody was leaving a place they weren't supposed to be, they would always run into the person that should not see them there. That was like a given. If somebody was sneaking around, I don't want Dr. Temple to find me. Dr. Temple, what brings you to Pine Valley? That was like a daily thing. And then the trumpets of doom.
Right. To a 1950s audience mostly composed of women and Bill Left.
And me.
Who were at home doing housework and raising children.
That's what I was doing.
Ms. Nixon's, it's Ms. So
Ms. Nixon.
Evidently she wasn't married. Ms. Nixon's early scripts for The Guiding Light and Search for Tomorrow provided an escape, a glimpse of dashing lives, handsome cads.
That's what got me, the handsome cads. I'm like, I want to be a handsome cad.
You know what got me? Huh. The Passions Run Amok.
Oh, there was that.
Dark Secrets and Terrible Betrayals. Who is writing this? Because this is
fantastic. I love this. They should have been a writer on All My Children.
New York Times. Like their predecessors, the new Nixon soaps were disturbing, fascinating,
yes,
and addictive.
True on all counts.
Because she presented various sides of a controversy, they were more complex. But she tried to avoid preachy dialogue, letting action and plot speak for themselves. The conundrum was no longer simply whether Tara was pregnant, but whether Phil, home from Vietnam and yep, scarred by the horrors of war, could still love her.
Phil Brent, you're referring to.
Philip Brent and Phil Tara. Brent.
He went on to be a police officer.
Oh, my God, I totally remember that.
Yeah.
Where's Billy Clyde Tuggles?
He's no longer with us. Matthew Cowles died a couple years ago. But Billy Clyde Tuggle, I think, was one of TV's best bad guys. He was the pimp, remember?
He was pretty great.
Married to Christine Baranski in real life.
That's right. Yeah. And Estelle was one of the ladies of the evening.
In his stable over on Locust Street.
And
as Donna. Who married, I think, every guy in Pine Valley at some point.
I think she got around.
She married everybody. Well, she was a prostitute.
That was the passions run amok.
Yeah, that would qualify as the
And that's
passions.
When the term hooker with a heart of gold started, I think.
And they also had on All My Children, well, I think on every soap opera, they always had an evil twin. Everybody had an evil twin that you didn't know about.
I know, and I am so sorry. Luke and Laura was not All My Children.
No, that was General Hospital.
I'm sorry. I'm thinking of Tad and Jenny.
Yeah, she died on the jet ski. Spoiler alert. Tony killed her on the jet ski. I was so involved.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, I guess by now, if you haven't watched your Betamax of All My Children, Jenny perished on a jet ski.
What was her name? Something Delaney?
Kim Delaney.
Oh, my God. She was just...
Beautiful.
Jenny was everything you wanted to be.
I know.
Well, not you, but
friends
me.
With Jesse. They
Jesse
were very
was
close.
Awesome,
yeah,
yes.
He was good.
Many Nixon stories were based on reality.
No, I don't think so. I take umbrage with that.
No, listen.
Because everybody at some point had amnesia.
No, but not everything, but many.
Okay,
now
many.
Now, listen.
All right.
This is... Agnes Nixon really made a name for herself, and she was... Actually, on an episode of All My Children, there's an episode and a scene with her and Susan Lucci.
Yeah. Erica Kane.
Yes. And Agnes Nixon played Agnes Eckhart, a longstanding board member of Pine Valley Hospital.
Oh, I didn't know that.
She was sick and ill. All right. Let me read you this. I just lost my place.
Agnes Nixon had such an illustrious career, and then that Watergate thing happened, and that screwed everything up for her.
No, that wasn't. Oh.
Wasn't she Andorra?
Yes. Yes, she was. That was Agnes Moorhead.
I can't find it. Can we take a quick break?
Yeah.
Because they're based on reality. Oh, do we want
But if we're going to take a break, you have to stare into the camera. That's what they would do on All My Children.
While the Temples of Doom play.
Right.
Trumpets of Doom, Temples of Doom.
The Trumpets of Doom. The Temples of Doom are the Jewish version of the same thing.
Bill, why don't you take
dun,
us...
Dun, dun.
Why don't you...
That's how that one would go.
Why don't you take us to break and we will leave them in suspense.
All right. More to come with Wendy Snyder and the Denizens of Pine Valley after this message.
Playing the part of Bill Leff today will be Bill Leff.
Sorry to disappoint everybody. This is where the book would open and we'd be seeing pictures of the various families and All My Children. I always noticed this, and I enjoyed this a lot of times. I'll give you an example. Dr. Cliff Warner married Nina Cortland, and they had a son named Bobby. And then that's when I was I a senior in high school? 5 years later, Bobby was the same age as me. So something in the water at Pine Valley made kids just grow at a rapid rate, where you could be born 1 year and then be my age just 5 years later.
You know what always amazed me about the soap operas, and this might be why I like to drink?
Huh.
They always, whenever somebody came over to somebody's house, can I get you a drink? And they always went over to these gorgeous decanters.
Sure.
And they always had clean glasses right. ready to roll with ice in the bucket. Right. Who filled that up?
Right.
It was always at the ready.
That would be
care for a scotch? Yes.
Their maid or their
I
butler.
Need one.
They always had help. Somehow they had help. I don't know how they did it.
Well, Agnes Nixon, who infused her soap operas with social relevance, died at 93 in Pennsylvania on Wednesday. And I started reading something, and you dismissed it, but you didn't let me finish.
I'm sorry.
Many of Nixon's stories were based on reality. I know you find that hard to believe.
I'm shocked by that.
Listen to this.
All right.
In 1964, after a friend died of cancer, she created a guiding light character who was found after a pap smear to have cervical cancer.
Oh.
Despite misgivings by the sponsor, Procter & Gamble, the character appeared on screen, though the words cancer, uterus, hysterectomy were never uttered.
You couldn't say any of those words on television,
I don't think Procter & Gamble wanted them
maybe.
To do it.
Right.
Even so, thousands of women wrote in to express gratitude for the information that a simple test, the pap smear, might save their lives.
Oh, wow.
That's pretty huge.
I know their first lesbian character on All My Children was played by Donna Pescow, who was also
Angie
from the ABC sitcom Angie.
From the ABC sitcom of the same name.
Of the same name, right. Right.
You know, back to the cancer thing, you tell me, but I feel like when we were kids, people didn't use the word.
The word cancer?
Yeah. I remember people
they didn't.
Not
who
as
were
often.
Older and sick, and they just, you know, they just said, well, she's very ill.
Or, yeah.
They no one liked to say the word cancer.
My grandmother, we had a Breast Cancer Awareness Month is coming up in October, and we had some people on.
Mm-hmm.
My grandmother had breast cancer before anyone really, you really never heard of it.
Right.
And really, it was so barbaric. They did radiation after a mastectomy. She had an infection that never healed. And even when my grandmother had cancer, it would be like, yes, she's very sick. Well, what's wrong? And it's like you'd have to keep asking, and then finally it would be like, she has cancer.
Right.
It
you'd
was very
hushed
quiet.
Tones. Yeah.
So you're right, Steve. And this is 1964.
Yeah.
That she put this on TV. One Life to Live, On One Life to Live, which began in 1968 and ran for 43 years. Ms. Nixon created a tale that reflected the nation's changing social structures and attitudes. It had many ethnic characters, including Jewish people, Polish Americans, and African Americans. A woman assumed to be white was revealed after months to be a light-skinned black person, turning the story and the audience sharply to questions of racial prejudice. These are pretty huge
things. This is groundbreaking.
For a soap opera.
Well, a lot of times then you could get away with it in daytime, but you couldn't get away with it in prime time. It was more acceptable in daytime because they weren't as scrutinized as they were in prime time.
And then Ms. Nixon's revolutionary changes were widely copied by other soaps and other networks and helped capture new audiences at a time when the traditional base of daytime viewers, 20 million to 30 million daily.
Wow.
The vast majority of them homemakers was being eroded by women entering the workforce.
My mom told me once, she and my dad would go to Las Vegas once a year for sure and sometimes more often. And one time on a trip from Las Vegas to Chicago, the lady sitting in front of her was an actress who played, I don't know if you remember this character on All My Children, but there was a woman named Claudette for a couple of years.
Oh, I remember Claudette.
So that lady was sitting, the actress who played Claudette is sitting in front of my mom. So my mom at the beginning of the flight mentions that she's a fan, and then for the entire flight, which is about a 3-hour flight, she asked her little inside things. Like I don't think she understood that it's just an actress playing a role, because she would say, oh boy, how about that Phoebe Wallingford? Every time she has somebody over, she's so rude to them and stuff like that. And I could just imagine this woman trying to say to my mom, I just want to sleep. I'm just an actress playing a role. I don't really know who lives in Pine Valley.
That is so funny. So the majority of people watching were women that were homemakers.
Yeah, and me.
Then it says increasingly men and college students drawn by their topicality were tuning in.
Yeah. But, and then they just kind of went away. I think because of reality TV, because I think the new breed of TV watchers wanted something that they thought was more real.
Well, weren't there a lot more choices too on cable TV?
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
It was Green Acres or One Life to Live at one point.
Right. Right.
That's no way to go forward.
And Bryn Mawr, Pennsylvania, very near where she grew up, was the prototype for Pine Valley.
Oh, was it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And she was married to the same man for 45 years. She had 4 children. It doesn't say what happened to him.
Because there were people in Pine Valley, like you mentioned, Erica Kane is one of them. There were people that were married 7 or 8 or 9 times.
I know.
You know?
Erica was the catch, though, I'm telling you.
Sure.
She was this tiny little hot thing who had dressed better than anyone on the show.
And couldn't win a daytime Emmy to save her life.
She has since won,
She eventually won one.
See, that kind of ruins it for me that she actually won. I wouldn't have accepted it if I was her, because it just makes more sense to say, because she was really the best on any show.
She was fantastic.
Mike has an All My Children comment. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Wendy. Hi, Bill.
Hi. What's up, Mike?
Well, you were talking about something in the water in Pine Valley.
Yeah.
I think it's more than just something in the water. The Martins.
Yes.
They had Tad and whomever else, but in the early 80s, Tad had a little brother.
Joey.
Well, I don't know if it was Joey or if there was another one, but he walked upstairs in one episode.
Yeah.
And then was never seen or heard from or referred to again.
Well, he had a younger brother named Joey. Now, remember, Tad Martin isn't actually a Martin. He's the son of Ray and Opal Gardner, who was adopted by the Martin
by the
family.
Martins.
Yeah.
Right.
That you could play that after anything we say about All My Children. And I think it was Joey. I think you're right.
Yeah, his younger brother was Joey. A bunch of different actors played him. But was there another brother besides Joey? Maybe.
Yeah, and the little boy, he walked upstairs and in the house and was just never heard from, seen, or referred to ever again.
Why wouldn't Pine Valley Detective Trevor Dillon have looked into this? I don't understand.
I remember Trevor.
Know. Uncle Porkchop.
Uncle Porkchop?
Yeah, that's what Kelly Ripa called him on the show. You don't remember any of that?
Uncle Porkchop? No, I don't really. I forgot Kelly Ripa was on that show.
Yeah.
All right, well, thanks for reminiscing, Mike.
Thank you, Mike.
Can we fast forward now to when Playboy did the Women of General Hospital?
Yeah, I remember that. Yep, I do remember that.
Was Jesse on it, the nurse?
There was the redhead.
Bobby. Bobby was
oh,
in there.
Zeman.
Bobby, yeah,
somebody,
Bobby.
Jackie Zeman, yeah.
Yeah. Not that
Boy,
I saw
thanks
it.
Thanks for
people told
making
me.
This filthy. I really appreciate
filthy.
It. We're all talking right. about the beautiful moments of Pine Valley. Yeah, that's
you
a,
were
let's
not.
Get the...
Some kid goes up the stairs and come down. Who cares?
Right. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then there's more show coming. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. It had predated us in our house for years. I don't know when they put the washing machine in, but it was an old washing machine, and it was great. I mean, it got stuff so clean. It was wonderful. And it died out. I mean, they don't last forever. It died out.
Thank you, Einstein.
So we went to, well, you know what? The washing machine and dryer that were in my house that I was growing up in are still working. And that's been like 40 years. I think they got them 40 years ago. They're still working.
They don't make them like they used to,
They don't make them like they used to. So we went to a store with a multitude of options when it came to washing machines. And we did not choose one of the more expensive ones. We chose one of the more economical ones. And almost every time we washed our clothes, first I noticed it. I'm like, I just got this shirt 3 weeks ago. There's a hole in it. How did this happen? And then the next time it'd be a pair of shorts. And the next time it was another shirt. And then other members of my family are like, yeah, we're having the same thing.
Is that why you took your shorts to the dry cleaners?
That's one of the reasons. And because I like being treated like a king. So nearly every time we washed our clothes, we would get holes in them because
I thought it was just you. It happened to the girls and Terry.
It was mostly me. Reese, I think, had a shirt with a hole in it, and Terry had a pair of workout pants or something. But almost always me, and almost every time we washed our clothes, I'd lose another shirt or pair of pants. And I'm not starting out with thousands of them. You see me. I have a very limited. Wardrobe, which is now even more limited. I got less outfits than ever. So listeners were kind enough to say, well, you've obviously purchased one of the cheaper machines. Why would you do that? So my wife has to, or if I'm washing the clothes, we have to add a special amount of water to it to fool the clothes into thinking there's more clothes in there than there actually are.
So you've kind of fixed it.
It's mostly fixed, but not entirely fixed, but mostly fixed. But every once in a while, still... I'll put something in and it comes out with a giant hole in it.
Well, now it can explode, now you're telling us?
Your washing machine can explode. Here's the story out of Huffington Post. First, it was your cell phone battery. We heard those stories a few weeks ago.
Oh, yeah, the Samsungs.
But now your washing machine could be in danger of exploding. The Consumer Product Safety Commission has issued a warning this week to owners of a certain top-loading Samsung washing machine saying that these appliances may pose safety issues. Now, Samsung makes...
I know, that's... I'm just thinking...
Incredible TV sets.
Yeah, but that's the phone that was blowing up.
They weren't they?
Isn't that the... The manufacturer of the Galaxy?
Samsung Galaxy.
Uh-oh.
So, great TVs, not so good with the phones and washing machines.
Well, now I'd be afraid the TV's going to blow up.
No, their TVs are like the best in the business. They do a great job with the TVs. My TV never explodes.
Not yet.
The warning comes on the heels of a class action lawsuit the customers have filed against the company claiming that their washing machines exploded during use. Wow. Samsung said in response to the CPSC, that's the Consumer Product Safety Commission, you know that, warning on its website has been in active discussions with the agency about safety issues affecting some top-loading washing machines that were made between March of 2011 and April 2016. That's a 5-year period. That's a lot of washing machines.
Absolutely.
The website also includes a way for customers to check if their machine is one of the affected products. Well, I would say that if it blows up, it is. If you go to get your clothes out and you notice that clothes are all over your laundry room and that there's a fire in your laundry room, you probably have one of the poorer of their washing machines.
Should I call you Einstein again?
You can if you want. And I will give you a discount at my bagel stores located in 12 states. In rare cases, affected units, hey, that's not nice, may experience abnormal vibrations that could pose a risk of personal injury or property damage when washing bedding, bulky, or water-resistant items, this according to the company, Samsung. The company recommends consumers with affected models use the lower speed, delicate cycle while washing bulky materials. That's
really
one of the things that they recommended for me with the holes, to use the slower cycles.
Speaking of holes, Dave, you have had the same problem Bill had.
Yeah, you know, I was telling your producer 50 years ago, my mom had an agitator washing machine with a hand crank to get the water out of the clothes. You shake it out, and then you hang it up.
I remember those. My grandma had those. It was hard to crank the clothes through, like, two rolling pin kind of things.
Yeah, and then we always used to sit there and try and put our hands in it to see if we get it to pop before we break a finger, but that was, you know, crazy things.
Yeah. That was before a cell phone. What do you expect?
Yeah, I mean, I tell you what, all these machines matter, and I told the producer, if I had a river and a rock, I'd rather do my laundry that way.
Better.
Because I hear the stories, people with their kitchen floors, the thing blowing up and shooting part of the thing through the basement floor.
Oh, no.
Or, you know, it's, I'm not going to mention the make, but I've had people over like 12 times. We had the warranty, but they're like, you know, why don't you just let it run out and then finally just die before you buy a new one?
Even with
a
warranty, it was still a problem.
Oh, yeah. I mean, where you get, you know, they tell you to put the cleaning tubes, or not the little, they look like, and it look like that stuff, the hard as rock, you put them in there, supposed to wash your machine.
Yeah.
You know, put it on clean cycle. You know,
I don't
and then
wash my washing machine. You do?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You recommend it at least once a month. This guy came out. He says, you better throw about three of them in there the first time. And this was already a year in, because we were getting the flakes and stuff breaking off from the inside, that, you know, the crud and the soap buildup. Yeah.
Was this, don't mention the name of the brand, but was this a major brand, a name that we'd all recognize?
Yeah, and it's also a company that's probably not going to be staying in business too much longer, I hate to say.
No, probably not.
For a lot of different things.
My washing machine is fine, you guys.
Yeah?
And I've never washed my washing machine.
You have an older one, though.
Well, it's about 19 years old, I guess.
That's older.
I guess.
The new ones, because they're trying to be more green and more economical, it's the same with toilets that don't flush the way they used to.
It's the HE, high efficiency, because now they make special detergent for it, too.
Yeah.
And I want to know if I can use that in my no efficiency washer.
Oh, I don't know.
Yours is high, mine is none.
Yeah.
Hi, Marge.
Hi. My daughter had one of those washing machines, and it blew up in her utility room.
What happened?
Her husband came home from work and asked her what the washing machine did to her that she got mad at it.
She's lucky she wasn't hurt.
Right.
Well, she did have a small baby, and she said they could have been hurt very easily. The whole top blew off, and she said it was still in the locked position. It went through the utility room wall.
Oh, no.
And she said they think the only reason it stopped was it pulled its plug out of the wall.
How frightening. That's awful.
Now, she said they read the instructions, and it does tell you don't put anything waterproof in the wash machine, like mattress waterproof mattresses.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Which, how do you wash them then?
I don't know. She has two little kids, so she washes them a lot.
Yeah, because little kids sometimes wet the bed, and you have those mattress covers that are waterproof.
Yeah, right. Right.
If they had been in the room, they would have been seriously hurt.
So what did she do? Did she call where she purchased it or the manufacturer?
Well, she said, I have two little kids and a lot of wash, and since the instructions said, don't put anything waterproof in there, they just sucked it up and figured, you know.
And then I'm hoping homeowners insurance pays for this, right? They'd have to, wouldn't they?
You know what? I don't know if they question the homeowner's insurance or not.
That's terrible. I'm so glad nothing worse happened.
It says don't put it in there, but I want to know how you wash waterproof stuff then.
By hand.
Exactly.
You guys, this is like technology. You don't wash anything by hand anymore?
It moved across the room, put a hole in the wall.
Holy moly. Marge, thank you for sharing
That's terrible.
You're welcome. Have a great day.
Thank you, you too.
Maybe put the waterproof stuff in the dishwasher.
I don't think so.
That's how you can wash action figures, you know.
In the dishwasher?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Maybe.
They get dusty.
I don't trust that at all. All right. We'll take a quick break. If you have a story to share with us, we're at 312-981-7200. Your washing machine could blow up. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder on WGN. Rowan Anna will be by in about 10 minutes or so. You want to hear some nice awkward audio? I think you'll enjoy this. I think this is fun. You know, Donald Trump has been criticized for the way he has criticized former Miss Universe pageant winner Alicia Machado. And actually, there's a second Miss Universe contestant who came forward yesterday who said that he did similar things to her. Here's the story out of Huffington Post. A second Miss Universe contestant has now come forward claiming that she was fat-shamed by Donald Trump. Jodie Seale, who was Miss Australia in 1996, told Inside Edition that the future Republican presidential nominee called the girls some pretty horrible names. He said to me, this is according to Jodie Seale, Donald Trump said, suck in your stomach or suck in your gut, she recalled. He always wanted us to be sexy. She described him as being controlling. He would walk by while we were eating, and he'd say, he would put a lot of the girls down. Trump is currently embroiled in a controversy over one of Seale's fellow competitors, that's Alicia Machado, who I told you about earlier, who won the event as Miss Venezuela. Trump later called her Miss Piggy after gaining weight and Miss Housekeeping because of her Latina heritage. It is rude. Now, listen to this audio. They found this over at CBS News. This took place the year that Alicia Machado won. It was the end of her year, and then the two of them appeared together on the CBS Morning News talking about her year as Miss Universe and the fact that there was about to be a new one. And the questionnaire, the guy who was doing the interview, it's a man named Jose Diaz Balart. He asked about the year that they've just had and the controversy involving her weight. She had gained around 20 pounds. He says almost 50, but realistically, they were saying, realistically, it was closer to 20. But Donald Trump has been saying 40 to 50. But listen to how awkward this is as he's interviewed about this, and they have opposing viewpoints about her weight gain. Listen to this.
Let's bring up the question. It says, should a pageant title holder be required to maintain her physical appearance during her reign? Why do you think this is an important question the viewers would care about?
Well, it's something that really has come up over the last year, and Alicia has done an incredible job. She really has turned out to be one of the great Miss Universes, I will say. And she had a little problem during the middle where she gained a little weight.
I don't think so.
Yeah, she's probably right.
I don't think so.
Okay.
That's it? I wanted more.
Well, there's more, but it's the same level of awkward, but it doesn't really progress. It's just, it's his opinion. And believe me, many people have said, if you're running a beauty contest,
the key is
everybody has to be beautiful. The people who are in the pageant are beautiful. Once you win, you have to remain beautiful because you represent the pageant. However, her version of the story is that some people do gain weight, and she did gain weight, and she shouldn't have been treated rudely by Donald Trump for gaining weight. That referring to her as Miss Piggy isn't in anyone's best interest.
No, that is just so rude, but he did say what you just said. After all, it is a beauty contest.
Well, I understand that, but I also understand you're dealing with human emotions, and it obviously was very upsetting to her. It wasn't her goal to win this thing and then gain weight. She just happened to gain weight. She talked about how in this interview, she talked about how because of the schedule, she wasn't eating as healthy as she used to eat. She didn't have time to work out. She was constantly traveling, and that ended up costing her some weight gain. But Donald Trump wasn't very hospitable toward her during that period.
Listen, people who have gained weight know they've gained weight, and if you're rude to them, they're right. just going to go eat. I know it hurts them, but
yeah,
it's
possibly.
You know, say something like he should say, you know, listen, I can help you out here. What do we need to do?
I think there's just
a way to say it.
Yeah, there was probably a more tactful option.
Because it is a beauty contest. I kind of agree with that.
Right, but I don't know. You see this woman in the interview, and you see the way Donald Trump, he just kind of dismisses it. Yeah, whatever, probably right. Ah.
Yeah, he did. He was totally dismissive. We have one caller, which we have to take immediately because we have...
We're short on time.
We are short on time. This is Joanne. Hi, Joanne. How are you?
Hello. How are you?
Good. We only have a minute. You are a former Playboy bunny?
I was. And what I was going to say is everybody's like piling on Donald Trump. But when I signed on for Playboy, we knew the rules. We knew we had weight requirements, makeup requirements, hair requirements, and we were checked before we went out on the floor. In addition, when we went in public, we also had to uphold the Playboy image. I don't understand what the big deal is. If they wanted to be Miss Universe contestants, they have to uphold the image.
Aren't there also airlines that have that written in?
I don't know if it is anymore, but
there was, yeah.
But Joanne, it's not like Hugh Hefner was calling you, hey, Miss Piggy, why don't you drop a few lbs?
Actually, it was. We had bunny mothers, and before we went out,
bunny mothers.
Yeah.
Yes, we did. It was a whole hierarchy. And before we walked out onto that floor, we were checked. If we were overweight, they had a call system that somebody would come and take us, replace us on the floor until we lost the weight.
Wow.
Wow. It's not new. The girls are being, I just don't understand. They're being petty. They knew. They knew what the rules were, and their exposure in these contests got them to where they are today.
And you wanted to be a Playboy bunny. Obviously, it was a really cool job at the time, so that didn't bother you to remain in the weight limit?
No, not at all. It was what it was. We all knew we were waitresses, but in essence, we had such a fabulous, fun life with wonderful experiences that I still remember.
How about that?
I bet you did.
Thanks, Joanne. Have a great weekend.
Pleasure.
Take care.
You too.
You should interview her sometime.
No,
I was just going to say, let's get her number. Well, I know you would want to.
No, come on. You're being a bunny mother. We've said urethra and bunny mother in the same show today.
I want to know what the bunny mothers look like. Were they hot and trim, or were they like, you know, matronly saying, lose a little weight, honey,
right,
and get me some smokes on your way out.
We'll take a quick break, and then we'll find out what Roe and Anna have planned for you. It's Bill and Wendy at WGN.